It's 2 o'clock. We have a quorum. Hopefully Laurel and Todd will show up. Maybe not. I do know that Sean is out of the country. So, anyway. I'm Joe Dunstan. I'm the chair of the Design Review Board. And today's meeting for September 16th is now called Order. We have an agenda with a number of projects on it this day. I want to start by... we don't have the minutes from last meeting, so we really can't look at them. So we will look at them. They both showed up. I got a few. Todd's here. Okay. Yeah, Laurel's here. Great. We can't really look at the minutes from the last meeting because they haven't been published yet. But I would like to ask, we have three projects, the Urban Self-Storage Project, Vincent Road Transfer Station, and the Wintergreen Apartments at the Visconti site. If anybody has any questions regarding relationships with any known relationships with anybody, or anything they'd like to disclose, or any anything like that, everybody's okay. Great. Okay, we have a number of people here today. I think it'd probably be a good idea to go around the table and at least introduce ourselves real quickly. Just for 30 seconds, and then we're going to add onto the agenda before we start at 2:10. Jennifer's here to give us an update on the Design Review Board meeting with the council. I guess that's a work session and a couple things like so. Can we go around the room real quick and introduce ourselves so everyone probably knows who we all are? And I'll start by saying I'm Joe Dunstan, I'm the chair of the Design Review Board.
Jane Ryan, DRB.
Michael Lovert, DRB.
Laurel Wilson, DRB.
Jennifer Sutton, Senior Planner with COBE.
Jane Reesley, Administrative Support.
Kelly Tejara, Senior Planner with the City and City Project Manager for all three of the projects.
Ryan Kelly,
Allison Leva, the Island School Board.
Jenny Morber, an Island School Board Member and Parent.
Okay.
Todd Thiel, Design Review Board.
Peter Perry, Design Review Board.
Let's go back there and go through. There's not that many people. Listen,
John Doman, Planning Commission. Mm-hmm. Steve Greetham, Interim Planning Manager with the City.
Mm-hmm. Brian Ransom, Brown Wheeler Engineers.
What's that?
Brian Ransom with Brown Wheeler Engineers.
Okay.
Adam Wheeler with Brown Wheeler Engineers.
Okay. Mike Whalen, Easter Resident.
Okay.
Charles Smith with the Association of Family and Community.
Chris Mitch, the John Ryan Tyson.
Travis Mitchell, Urban Self-Storage.
Great. Okay, so let's move right past the minutes and ask Jennifer to update us to what you know about the meetings.
Great. Well, the Design Review Board worked really hard to assist the city in drafting updates to the Design Guidelines Manual, which is now going to be called Design for Bainbridge. And it's a real, as you know, but just for the benefit of people knowing it, it's a real overhaul, totally paradigm shift from our existing design guidelines. And the Planning Commission had a study session presentation, kind of an overview of the updated document on August 22nd. Chair Dunstan was there and helped a lot, helped the Planning Commission understand the work and why the design guidelines are being reorganized so much. And then the Planning Commission had a public hearing on September 5th. I wouldn't say there's any dramatic, they didn't recommend any big changes. They recommended more clarifying changes.
I would call it wordsmithing with a little bit of a legal bent to it.
Yeah, they, they made, they improved kind of the categorization to make sure that it's clear what are the design standards in the document versus the design guidelines. So there's some heading changes. They had a deep discussion about the land use review process overall, and we tried to get them to understand that the whole review land use review process doesn't need to be in the design guidelines, that the design guidelines are one part of it and need to refer to it, which the first chapter of the Design for Bainbridge has a how to use this document section and standards versus guidelines relation to other regulations that were, I think, improved based on the Planning Commission's review. So as you know, as the Design Review Board knows, this is a product that's part of the Development Moratorium Work Program. Mm-hmm. And right now, the Development Moratorium is slated to expire on October 3rd unless the Council decides to extend it in some way, and they're going to talk about that on September 24th, the Council is. So the Planning Commission recommended approval of the design for Bainbridge with those changes that they discussed. So the document has been updated. The City Council is going to talk about it at a study session tomorrow night. So if you want to see the updated document, like I said, it's more clarifying and wordsmithing than anything substantial, but that's in the council packet for tomorrow night's meeting. So at study sessions, the council sits down around a table, if any of you have been to one, and there isn't a public comment section of the meeting, but generally if there's been a body that's been active in whatever the issue is, such as the Design Review Board, they may want to invite one or two of you to sit up with them around the round table to contribute to their discussion. So if any of you were available to go to the meeting, you might be called upon to answer some questions about, I know some of you are new to the board, hopefully you've gotten somewhat of a briefing of the old versus the new. It is not the first thing on the agenda. It is not slated to start till 8:30, and it's slated for a 30-minute discussion. But the rest of the meeting is pretty interesting. WatchDOT is giving a presentation at 6:15 on all of the planned improvements on 305, and then they're going to talk about ethics, and then they're going to talk about possible inclusionary zoning. So, very interesting meeting tomorrow night, if any of you were available. And then, so they're going to talk tomorrow night, and then there is an advertised public hearing on the design for Bainbridge at the following meeting on the 24th, and the council may or may not take action to adopt the regulations, or maybe they'll request some changes. So,
question. You mentioned the wordsmithing and the clarification. Is there a red line version so we can see what the suggested changes are?
There is not a red line version. There's the September 5th Planning Commission version versus what's in the current council packet. But if you wanted to talk with me on the phone about where they made the changes, we could go. The red line version is, you know, in my handwritten scrawl.
Would it be easier if I just came to see you?
Sure. You can come see me tomorrow, or we can talk about it over the phone. Like I said, most of them were small changes to the how to use this document, and labeling standards versus guidelines, just to make that really clear. So, you're welcome.
So I have a question. You did mention the moratorium on October 3rd, and that this is a work product of the year on that. So mm-hmm. are you saying that the council did approve the guidelines, that they wouldn't go into effect until after October 3rd? Is that or vice versa? The real question I'm asking is when do we think that these would go into effect?
That's after the 24th, wouldn't it?
Well,
it'd have to be, but I was getting the impression she was saying it might be after the moratorium ended.
It would be at least five. So, like, let's say they took action and approved them on the 24th.
Okay.
They have to publish that they've done this action. And so, at the earliest, it is the Wednesday following when they would take action. So, at the earliest, it would be kind of right around the 3rd.
So, it's not really associated with the moratorium directly. That was my question.
It is in that. You know, it's one more moratorium. If the council ultimately, if they do approve it, then in theory, that's a moratorium work program item that they can check off if they want to allow it to expire on October 3rd. I don't know whether they will or not. If you're interested in that topic, probably want to tune in to the council discussion or send them a comment. But they're going to be talking about whether or not to let it expire or to extend it in some way on the 24th.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions about that? Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Sure.
Have a great evening. Thank you.
Is in place before the moratorium?
That's what I'm really trying to get at.
Right. So they would be
in place.
Yeah, they would be in place
before the end of the moratorium.
Right. Correct.
Correct. Because I think that was the goal.
Correct. Yes, that they would be effective prior to the moratorium expiring on the 3rd.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I would encourage anybody who is around tomorrow and want to go to the meeting to go and possibly listen and see what have the questions. I'm going to try to go and be there at 8:30, but I'm not 100% sure. But
it's just a reminder that if you all are going to go,
we can't go. We have to have less than 4.
Yeah.
I know.
Thank you.
We can't have a meeting. Right, I'm fine. Meeting. Right. Hmm. If anybody wants to go, how about anyone wants to go? Let me know so I know who's going. Okay. Onward and upwards. It's just right about a couple minutes up to 2:10. Urban self storage.
I'm going to get my applicants to the table here.
Get them to the table. Okay. And as we start, Kelly, I noticed that here it says it's a design guidance meeting.
Oh, yeah.
It's a design guidance meeting, so
it is.
They are not, we haven't met with them before, if I'm correct.
Well, they come in a couple years ago, maybe back in 2017.
Okay.
So some of you may have seen this. This may seem somewhat familiar.
Okay.
Land use process changed.
Okay.
So because they had gone all the way through pre-application conference and prior to the changes to the land use process, okay. The conceptual meeting was waived by the director. So they essentially are here to follow. Like, did you want me to make a brief statement about what this is?
Yeah.
They're just here to...
Okay, just the zoning and all the stuff.
And let them present
the zoning is business industrial.
Yep.
They want to construct a self-storage facility on an undeveloped property. It's on the corner of... so that would be the southeast corner of Highway 305 and Dave Road. And it's 3 buildings totaling 67,000 square feet of floor area. And the lot size is 4.79 acres.
Okay.
Are there any exceptions that we know of to the rules? Any variances required? Or
that's part of what the applicants are here to tell us, whether they're requesting. So part of the goal of this meeting is for the applicant to identify any departures from design guidelines or the construction standards and specifications, and for the DRB to make a recommendation or any recommendation on consistency or better consistency with design guidelines in the comprehensive plan. Mm-hmm.
So have they turned in a checklist? Is
yes.
there a complete checklist?
Yes, it was there.
This package. I didn't see it. I had a little trouble navigating.
I did too.
For some reason. I'm not sure why, but anyway.
Well, perhaps you can.
Okay.
I completed.
Okay.
We don't have this. Are you talking about this checklist or the design guideline checklist?
Design guidelines.
They did submit.
Yeah, we get it.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, so we determined that their submittal for the design guidance meeting was complete as of September 16th, and actually, I remember telling them it was one of the most complete we've received yet.
Okay.
So it's a really good packet.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Okay. So do you want to take we have a little less than an hour, so you want to take just like 10 minutes maybe to go over the project?
Sure. Might take
much of
that.
And then we'll go right to the
end.
We can take more, but we just have an hour.
No problem. Like Kelly said, we were looking at doing a 3-building facility and over almost 5 acres. The plans over the elevations over the side are similar for each of the 3 buildings. It's a mix of CMU and metal siding, vertical seam siding. We've got the property surrounded by the 50-foot easement, I'm going to call it, of existing forest around the facility itself. So there's
limited visibility from Day Road due to that requirement. We have the curved entry into the space, so you can't see directly in, just going down through some of your design guidelines requirements. Maintaining the forested buffer. Let's see what else we got here. We got, there's going to be possibly minimal fencing around the facility just as a security measure. In the facility itself, it won't be out on Bay Road. It'll be more around near the facility.
Did you say metal fencing?
Some sort of fencing, yes. We haven't determined what kind yet. Yes, exactly. Minimum widths on the driveways and landscaping. In addition to the 50-foot of the forest buffer, we do have ample landscaping around the site and the buildings themselves. No loading docks are on this project. We don't have any agricultural. It was a forest previously, so we're, like I said, maintaining as much as we can of the existing forest and old-growth trees. Expand passive recreation area that wasn't applicable to this site, and then ensuring the lighting is not going to bleed off into the adjacent properties. Given we're 50-foot barrier already, and then we're using light packs on the side of the building just for the access of the facility and security around the facility itself, so there isn't any excessive light poles or anything like that in the parking lot and so forth. It's more on the buildings and adjacent to it, so there's no need for additional spillage into any adjacent properties. That, in a nutshell, is the project. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, I think. I don't know if Travis, do you have anything you want to add?
Not much. We designed it into the existing topography of the site. So yeah. The first building up there, you access this parking area up top. That's where the rental office will be, some loading, and then you'll drive downgrade to the lower exterior access and some interior access units, and then the lower two buildings are all single-story buildings.
Do you have a site section?
Not in this package, no.
Oh.
Sorry.
A site section. You have a lot of impervious cover. What are you doing with the water?
It's going into that storm drainage pond on site.
I guess I can't see it from here.
Yeah, it's a very large pond.
Very large pond. It's taking.
Oh, that pond. Okay,
yeah,
that's
it's
a
taking.
Okay, that's a pond.
Account for all of the drainage on the site.
You said in your statement that you're preserving as many of the trees as possible, but you're actually clear cutting 2 acres?
Yeah.
We are, yes. I mean, we've done the forestry report and everything as required by the city. But to make the facility user-friendly and make it work for its need, there is need for some removal of trees. But we are keeping a majority of the trees around the property to keep that.
And I think we further set back the facility 10 feet from the buffer, if I'm not mistaken, to not impact any of the root balls along the buffer of any existing trees.
One of the design review guidelines requires modulation of a building facade, and you have a 35-foot high CMU wall in a high seismic zone area. Would you like to talk about that?
Well, we haven't gotten involved with our structural engineers yet, but they're very familiar with the process and be using grade beams or whatever is necessary to make sure it's seismically up to code.
Well, I know I just said up to code, but it's just a 35-foot high CMU wall in a high seismic area.
Yeah, it'll be reinforced masonry, so.
Focus on that, but it's 35 feet for what purpose?
Based on the topography of the site,
right.
Because it's sloping downward, it's a two-story building, so.
On that southern exposure, it's two stories, but it's a single story on below and a single story above.
Right there. And it's all, the roof is sloping in that direction, correct?
Correct.
So this side is higher because the roof starts to slope from here down.
Correct.
So that could potentially be lowered.
Potentially be what?
Lowered. It doesn't need to be 35 feet. If you were to change the
roof. Well, there's a floor in there, and we need a certain clear height inside below the structure.
The first building, when you drive around to the back side of the building, there's the lower section, and above that is the floor above.
Right. There's just a space in here, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But Florida.
We usually 10.5 feet floor to floor.
So 10.5 would be 22 plus something. So it doesn't.
Was,
there's additional 10 feet or something like that.
Isn't helping you. Right.
Right. That's just attic space or something like that. Correct.
Well, it's like you said earlier, but it's helping with the slope of the roof as well.
Yeah.
So.
Or you could change the slope of the roof and have a pitch.
You could, yeah.
And changing the slope of the roof would naturally change the height of the building, depending on what type of roof you went with.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because they put a raise in here in the middle and slope this way, slope this way, but it's still going to be, around this side, it's 28 feet.
Right.
So in theory, on the other side, it could be down to 28 feet.
Right, correct. Yeah.
Are you requesting any departures from existing standards? Building code, zoning requirements.
No.
Okay. And is some Kelly or you are you guys going to talk about the comp plan or if it's consistent with the comp plan, which I don't have in front of me. And
I think the comp plan is in your packet in your the manual you were given. I can talk a little bit about it.
Sure.
Let's see. I would look to land use. So business industrial use would be encouraged in the business industrial district. I'd look to the economic element to encourage businesses to locate on Bainbridge Island, to provide jobs and businesses and services that serve this population. And I would assume that to a large extent this facility would serve primarily local residents.
Is there anything about buffer?
In the comprehensive plan?
Yeah.
There is not very much about trees in the comprehensive plan, though. That would come in the standards, so in the landscaping and zoning standards in Title 18. There are requirements about, say, the number of tree units that are required on a lot, and then buffering requirements.
I don't want to interrupt. Okay. Another question, do you have an idea of how many storage units there will be?
We do. Sorry, off the top of my head.
Well, you're looking at who are your neighbors and that lot there? Who's around you?
This is, I'm going to pass this around. Here's this figure scale drawing of the island. If you can see the island school and Grace Church and that building facility. Too.
We're right next door. Our elementary school, we're board members of the island school.
Mm-hmm.
We're right next door to that property.
Right.
The veterinary clinic's on the other side. Do I have
The
veterinary clinic is a little building to
that. That's the little building.
That's the veterinary clinic.
Okay. Right.
And it's not the building.
What's the setback on between the island school and the
50 feet, I thought?
Yeah.
50 with additional
10. 50
on
the additional 10 foot.
60 building. 10, yeah.
It's 60.
So 60?
From the property line.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, okay.
And which facade of all those faces on school?
That's the northernmost building. Building one is the northernmost building.
So which
two
levels? On the this drawing.
It's
that big old blank wall there?
Yeah.
But this is also not including, there's a roof that's sloping up.
It's sloping up and not showing.
Which would actually make the impression of that facade be a little bit bigger.
Yes.
Because you're looking at that roof of that.
Right. If you could see it through the forest, yes.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't want to lose fact that there is a 50-foot barrier of dense forest around the entire facility.
It's alder trees.
Did you want to entertain public comment at this point, or do you want to entertain it at the end?
We'll take public comment at this time.
Okay.
And we'll do the meeting. So.
There's two other buildings. This one's 140 feet.
We at the Island School, the board, have great concerns about this project. Some of our concerns are increased traffic, harmful substances and pollution, safety of bicyclists who come to the school, construction dust, the trees, most of the ones that abut our school and the property are deciduous trees, so although it might look like a pretty good buffer right now, we're concerned that throughout the year that won't be the case. The height of the building will restrict light. A large portion of our school has sky lighting. The lighting of the school is very important. We're concerned about fencing, both for the safety of the children. Right now, the plan calls for, I think it's chain link fencing.
They refer to it as hog fencing, too, on the property line between us.
So either the safety of it or just having kids right up against some sort of like razor wire or barbed wire. Let's see, what else do we have on here? Heavy truck traffic from people moving their stuff in and out of facilities. Increased crime and drug use, which is shown to increase around self-storage facilities. Light pollution during all times of the day. Me, as a resident of the northern end of the island, I really enjoy how dark it is, so I can see the stars. I'm worried that those lights will need to be on all night for the security of the building, and that will affect the light pollution on the north end of the island. Also, on that side of the road, the character is heavily wooded and rural. We have a winery, we have a Sumiatsu Farms, we have the island school, which is we have a church, and we have a small animal hospital. That property was zoned as light manufacturing in 1999 to satisfy the owners of the business Mastercraft Lighting. And according to a Kitsap Sun article during that time, the owner says, "We want to leave most of the property's open space. The space will be used as artist studios for craftspeople involved in the business and won't cry out commercial when you see them." In fact, some of that verbiage was copied in the document allowing the change in zoning. And I feel that this structure definitely will cry out as commercial, and so it will affect the character of that portion of the area and the island.
Something else? Paul? Yeah, I mean, I've got a few other points. The island school has been there since 1983. We currently have about 80 students. We've educated about 3,000 over the course of the term. We have good relationships with our neighbors, the church, Sage Manufacturing, as well as the animal hospital. There is a 60-foot buffer between the two. It is not as dense as this building will be seen unless significant vegetation is put up. It will impact the daylight hours of the school. The height of the building one is the tallest building on the tallest or the highest part of the lot. If you need that height, why not on the third building on the lower part of the lot, would be a suggestion. There's also calls for there to be a lot of windows in the plan. I don't see very many windows. The rezoning that happened in 1999 appeared, and in my opinion, was conditional, although whether it was or not, I'm not an attorney, I don't know. And the owners who applied for that subsequently sold the property and didn't develop it. I believe it should go back to residential the way it was. The neighboring property, the 7 acres that's for sale, is residential. And we operate under a conditional use permit, one that we redo every year. We have long-term debt. We're not going to move the school because of this. We have an investment in 3,000 children, plus their parents, and we provide at least 20 jobs with this conditional use permit. The light manufacturing designation, manufacturing implies a degree of converting a product into something. It implies jobs. I don't believe many jobs come along with a self-storage facility. There might be a manager or two. I could be wrong, but I don't see a lot of jobs being created. The planning application design guideline checklist also calls for a lot of varied roof lines. I don't see a lot of varied roof lines. I don't see a lot of curves. I don't see a lot of windows. I see a big cement block building facing our children. From a manufacturing perspective, I believe that it's heavy manufacturing for 6 months, and then it becomes profits exiting the island through the rattle of self-storage units. Nothing's being created beyond the heavy manufacturing of the first 6 months or however long it takes to build the building. Our board feels this way. Again, we do have very good relationships with our current neighbors. We're open to different suggestions, but we clearly have an issue with the way it is proposed today.
Yeah. I would like to add, I'm sorry, that the property also abuts residential land right there, and you can look back there and see trails the children take. In addition, we were looking at establishing a relationship with a nearby food forest and using those trails back there, and it looks like that could affect our access to those enrichment opportunities for the children as well.
One of the design guidelines also asks for the loading docks not to be visible, and there are no loading docks, which I think is a point to be made about it not really being a light manufacturing facility. The stuff that does face the island school are the trash bins, and again, the three large walls that are cement masonry units without windows.
Kelly, is storage units listed as a permitted use in the LM zone?
Yeah, it's not light manufacturing, it's business industrial.
Sorry.
It's an industrial use. Self-storage facilities are permitted industrial
and
use.
And so when did it go from LM to B?
Business industrial. It was, I don't know for sure, but it was in the last decade that name change took place.
Do you know why it changed?
I do not, offhand.
But the use has changed along with that.
The uses were fairly consistent. There may have been, there's infrequently changes or additions. Say the most recent was live-work units.
Okay.
So there are infrequent changes, but self-storage has been a use in what used to be called business industrial and is now what used to be called light manufacturing and is now called business industrial. That has been a permitted use for a very long time.
I am curious about the reference to the language used when in 1999 when this was achieved, because if that's part of the, you know, the public record, I would, for your own sake, I would really want to trace that back and go, okay, are we cool here? Because, you know, things can happen with zoning, and if there's not a clear association with what happened prior, any movement to the next, it could create problems all
right,
around.
I did jot it down for research.
Good.
And certainly something I'll touch base with the city attorney if I find something.
Well, and that shouldn't take a long time. Good.
One of the things that is also alarming to us is in order to improve security, it requires lighting, more management, more on-site facilities. And if you search self-storage and criminal activity, there's, you know, we are within 60 feet. And if you search self-storage criminal activity, there's a lot of meth labs that are started in these facilities. I'm not suggesting that you would encourage that. I'm not suggesting that it would happen. I am suggesting that I want to know that they're not there and that the right precautions are taken.
So on that point, I'm still not clear about fencing. You've been talking about the fencing as being minimal, and I'm just wondering the height of the fencing.
The razor wire.
It's chain link in the plan that I saw.
I didn't find the height there. Maybe I missed it. Do you know what the height?
The hog wire fence is referenced as 4 feet.
See, and that's not, in my mind, would not be significant to achieve your concern or any neighbor concern off that project. That's a point, I guess.
But the construction phase, I think, needs to be managed properly, too. I mean, we are a school of children of different backgrounds, different diversity, that come from off-island as well.
And noise is a substantial impact to learning capabilities. If we could manage the construction noise, not being around school hours, maybe during the summer or something, or something.
We have children with hearing disabilities. We have children who are diagnosed with hearing sensitivities that wear special headphones to enable learning, and we're very concerned about their ability to learn and their health, the noise, construction, dust, just everything that we know is entailed in building a large facility like this.
Can I ask a question? When you use your property and kids go outside and on trails and all that, how close do you get to the edge of that property?
Oh, they come right up against it.
I'd argue they're on the property sometimes.
Yeah. So they come right up against it. So then all there would be a 60-foot buffer to the building.
And a 4-foot fence.
And a 4-foot fence. So I think the 4-foot fence is probably an issue, I would guess, for that. But it's also only 60 feet. And what I'm concerned, the red line right there, it talks about that building being 240, how many
feet? One's 195 feet long, one's 210 feet long, and the other one is, the architects would know.
Yeah.
This is 200, building two is 210 feet long, building one is 195 feet long.
The island school is basically right here.
There's a scale diagram.
And the majority of the school, that you see, looks out this direction and that direction, and the church is back here. But ultimately, this is going to be a fairly high wall at 60 feet. It's going to be fairly high, and it's going to block sunlight. And it's not like there's anything done to make it look not like a large cement building.
And then the playground comes right up against
the children play it right here. There's a workout facility, and what do they call it?
There's
activity here as well, all in this area.
Yeah. I do feel like that you've addressed some of the street frontage issues with the location of your road entry and coming in and trying to look at the design guidelines. I feel like it's sort of similar to a hotel in the sense that we spend a lot of time on the road entry, but then the sides can look like whatever they look like, you know, and they tend to not look good, most hotels. And these kinds of projects don't look good down the side, and I am concerned about that view towards the school, especially when you look at these are stores. And in other words, it's an economy project because it's storage, but you know, I understand that. But it's pretty, not a lot of relief there in those. And I don't know if there's an opportunity to do more relief on the side of that building, say in the first half of the project from the road, to address their concern about where the building is. That maybe building one have a different, more variation on the side, and possibly.
What are we referencing? I'm just trying to understand what you're referencing by more relief.
Well, so when you look at the guidelines,
more cantilevers.
Well, paneling or changes, and usually it comes in the form of roof changes, elevation changes, windows, building material changes. So you get a variety of textures along the side of the building. Now, you can't put windows in. The project has some certain, you know, basic issues, which I understand. But if there's a way to creatively look at trying to make a better side on that, what I believe is the east side of building one.
Yeah. Could I offer this suggestion? When you have a big bare wall, cabling up the side, growing vegetation up the side, is a really good solution that's not very expensive, and it's a great way to take what would otherwise be a very boring, ugly facade and make it a lot gentler in the landscape. And that really is what the intent of Guideline 1, preserve vistas and viewpoints. You know, try to make sure that what you're looking at is conducive, and I think given the fact that you've got that population of kids next door, be nice to bear that in mind. And I think even though the buffers might meet the requirements, you might consider that if it is a deciduous forest, that you might want to add some evergreen trees into that because you are taking a lot of vegetation out of it.
2 acres. They're cutting 2 acres.
Yeah, two acres is a lot.
Project. Yeah.
And is there any provision for in the fencing for wildlife to get in and out of that fencing? Because that's another problem that I always have is when you fence something, you've completely ignored the animal population there. And if you cut them off from exit, basically they either die or can't breed. And our comprehensive plan really is looking towards much more innovative solutions to these kinds of issues. So as an island, what we want to see is something wonderful. This is not wonderful. So our challenge to you is show us something that would win an award for being wonderful and thoughtful and conducive to the island, and then we'd be a lot more receptive, I think. You know, there may be other issues, but the massing, it's a mass of steel and concrete. It's not really what we're looking for on Bainbridge. This is probably one of the most beautiful places in the United States of America.
Yeah.
We want to keep it that way.
I'm definitely, I'm open to the suggestions when we're going through the design process.
Yep.
I guess when we've been out on the site in the past with a 50-foot buffer, we haven't even really thought about, I don't know if anybody here has been out to that site and looked through there, but the trees, I'm not sure what the height of them are, but they're well above any of the structures of the building, so
yep.
I don't think we were thinking that that was an aesthetic feature that we had to focus on.
Yeah.
On the east side. Well, you're right about the height of the trees. They are. And I think when they're down low and they're at eye level, you're not looking at, you know, the foliage, you're looking at a trunk, and there's, you know, 10, 15 feet between each trunk, and so we're going to be staring at the side of the building.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a pretty established forest, so there's not a lot of limbs that are lower down, and once you start to, you know, 50 foot, 60 foot, you're going to be able to see through it. And I think one thing also to kind of talk about too a little bit is just the history of the area, and perhaps, I don't know about what you guys were talking about earlier, but also that corner, that intersection was also super key in terms of founding the land trust, and the property to the southeast or southwest was kind of supposed to be under development, and they came together to kind of save that property. And the whole goal was to not make that intersection something that where you actually see a lot of commercial enterprises. So the context of the area, so that's why I don't know this for sure, but the veterinary clinic is residential designation. It's not business industrial. I think that's probably because they didn't want a huge industry right there at that corner. And then where all the Bay Road intersection or all the Bay Road industries are, some of the buildings are a little bit more obvious from the street, but they actually do a pretty good job in terms of hiding them from different properties, and so you don't really know that they're there. And my fear is that you guys are up on kind of a high hill, and so that with removal of the trees, and if any future limbing of the trees occurs, those buildings are going to be extremely obvious, and so I think there needs to be kind of a requirement to have for the entire complex to actually, maybe the planting plan becomes much more, like expands more, that there's a requirement that the buildings aren't visible from any of the adjacent properties to kind of fit into the context, and that I forgot what else I was going to say, so I'll just stop at that moment. Oh, but the other thing was also just, I mean, I think part of the business industrial component is it does say that, you know, the purpose of this is to provide opportunities for knowledge-based businesses and the expansion of island businesses for diversity of jobs. And I think one thing that would, and I kind of feel like when the entire property turns into a storage rental place, we've eliminated the ability for there to be industry or businesses on the island, because that's going to be a use that's going to be hard to transition out of. And I would love it if there was a way that a portion of that could be either like not built out or something preserved, so that there could be the potential for public or for businesses to actually move in. And I think it's important to know that the agricultural land is adjacent, or not immediately adjacent, but very close. Tuimasu Farm is there, and they're trying to figure out, they need to have things, processing space and stuff like this. And so it could make sense to actually start working with neighboring businesses to actually allow space for agricultural production to go on there. I mean, so whatever they need in terms of like kitchens or something, commercial kitchens or something like that. So there might be the potential to have some of it be storage space, but maybe there's other uses that could occur there that would actually benefit the neighborhood rather than kind of isolated.
Yeah, I mean, I like those ideas. Unfortunately, that's not our business model, and that's not what we're professionals in, so we don't know how to get that realm. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, going back to 2014, we purchased the property because it was zoned the way it was zoned.
Yep.
And, you know, we wanted to follow the design guidelines and create this 50-foot buffer around, you know, that was required because of these very reasons that we're talking about now. So we did our best to make this project work based on the design guidelines and the minimizing factors that the property had going right into it.
Yeah, well, I think we recognize that you bought it in good faith to be able to do those things. And for many of the things that have been brought up today, they're not relevant to that zoning. You bought something that's zoned in a way that you're able to do these things. But we're challenging you to do much better architecturally and from a landscape architect's perspective also. Because even though you've bought this and that you'd like to bring this here, we'd like to see you do a much better job of designing it.
Just
in a way that has that minimum impact.
I do want to bring up on that east side, though, we do have extensive landscaping, so we have the 50-foot barrier, and then that extra 10 feet that Travis mentioned earlier is just completely filled. If you looked in your packet, it's just completely filled with additional landscaping. So we are making that attempt to meet the guidelines and blend that building in so you won't be staring at that wall. And understand that that dark gray line underneath that east elevation is the grade line.
Yeah.
So really you're only looking at like a 14-foot high building on that side, which is, you know, well below any of those trees blocking sunlight and so forth.
Yeah. So I think if we saw those, you know, that landscaping drawn into that space as it was going to be built, that might help us a little bit because we're looking at something that isn't.
Sure.
And I know that with new landscaping, you know, it takes years, depends on the tree species and so on.
Right.
And so I think you've got to be looking at possibly buying bigger trees, faster-growing trees.
It's indicated in here what size of trees are.
But it's also...
We're not planting saplings.
but it's also not just trees. It's understory. Because you've got the trees that are up there, and that's fine, but you've got kids that are at 4 to 6 feet, 3 to 6 feet high, looking under the trees, and in a forest, you don't have any limbs,
sure.
Right? So it's understory. So I would want to see the landscape plan, actually, and
it's right
and
there
would actually go through it and say, you know, could you do more coastal redwoods or things that were more, you know, at that 0 to 8 foot level.
That's in here right here. So, I mean, yeah, it's in the packet that describes the height of the trees and the planting, the shrubberies, and all that other kind of stuff. And like I said, going in that attempt, our landscape architect is very familiar with this area. Has done a fantastic job. Landscape architects, based out of Tacoma.
I think there's also a concern, I completely agree with the east, but also on the west. Because it's perched up there
on the hill.
On that side, it's not very dense.
Yeah.
And to have, you know, that elevation over there kind of looking over that intersection is a big problem.
And the landscape design that you guys had, you had most of the new plantings just in this area, and so I think there were some more.
Yes.
Like there's new plantings around all
on the in this portion too?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't notice most of it there, but as long as that area...
It wraps around the entire property.
From the other plan. I'm referencing that.
It's wrapped around. I mean, it's... Yeah, like you said, it's extensive right there by the pond, but then it does wrap all the way around the whole project.
Yeah.
There's some drawings we're missing.
Be
and
a
the drawings
more.
Are to show the buildings on the site, the whole site. Mm-hmm. Three buildings.
The whole
thing, the whole picture is missing. And I think with some of the comments that have been said here about landscaping, fencing, I think those are essential drawings that are missing for judging right now. Because Because you don't really get the whole picture.
So I'm confused. So we have.
I'm talking about an elevation that shows all three buildings.
So
on the site.
The only difficulty, and we'd be happy to show elevations, is the topography of the site drops like this all the way to the bottom.
It's a pictorial thing. I know. I'm an architect, so I've drawn drawings like that. It's not that hard.
So, yeah, what kind of perspective would be ideal?
An elevation
of the first building?
A site section.
You want a site section that is looking entirely east of how it looks going through the site.
And the full depth. So on this one of the east, you see where the roof really is. You see the impression of the roof. Because, as is often said, that's the fifth facade. And in this condition, that's going to be a big sloping plane that's going to collect all kind of debris on it.
Can you scroll up just the base elevations of the trees? I just want to look at it.
Did you come up with the number of units?
I did not know. I mean, it's 67,000 square feet. So, I mean, it's 67,000 square feet.
I think off the top of my head, it was around like 570 or something.
570
like
storage units. And is this a 24/7 operation?
No.
But the lights will be on 24/7, right?
Exterior lights, yeah. They'll be shielded exterior lights that'll stay on the property.
But what hours?
Well, we haven't established hours yet. We're a ways out for that, so it depends on location, but we typically have office hours from 9 to 6, and then some sites we have access hours from 5 a.m. to 10 or 11 p.m.
Okay. So have you done it?
Can I just finish
one more? Okay, sure.
Yeah. And on the lighting, is it wrong to assume that motion-activated lighting would that be possible?
Exterior lighting?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's possible. Yeah,
because especially since it's attached to the building. You want it lighted if somebody you want to see them or they want to see where they're going, and then that would leave the site dark a lot of the time at night. I'm assuming,
or at least facing the neighbors.
Yeah,
you know, or
yeah,
like
facing
that.
The school and the veterinarian.
So that's something you consider.
Yeah, we consider that.
Okay. So have you done it? So if you're not sure right now, fan, what the number of units are, then I assume you haven't done a traffic study yet?
No, we have done a traffic study. We just didn't have that information in front of us. He just had the gross square footage on the plan, but we have the total number of units.
So you do know the number of units, you just don't have...
As you go through the plan, has all the units shown on there laid out with hallways and everything. Okay. You just didn't have a summary.
I don't know how big of an issue it is or not, but Urban Bainbridge LLC technically has been administratively dissolved as well. So I think
the
listed owner of the project is not on record.
It could have been an administration issue with renewing the LLC.
Just needs to be renewed.
I'm really concerned about the scale of this building.
It's a big building.
The building is an acre and a half. The building itself.
Yeah.
It's just way out of scale. And I understand that, you know, there are other large buildings down Day Road, and there's a cluster of manufacturing, or it really is craft people making things. And it really is artisans making things. But this is an acre and a half of building just to store the stuff that people bought at Costco up the road. And I don't think we want to set that as a precedent for our island.
Well, there's other storage properties on the island.
I know,
and they're
plenty
much
of them.
Larger than ours, and they're full right now. And we've done independent studies to make sure that it's viable, which is why we're here today. And reducing the footprint of the building would make it economically unviable for us to be able to develop the site, because there's certain economies of scale for us to make something like that work with all the expenses involved in it. So that's
a lot of the other storage units on the island. Some of them, not all of them. You can't see from the road as well. You simply can't see them. North Pacific Mini Storage is a perfect example.
Which one?
So North Pacific Mini Storage in Island Center. You don't know where it is.
I don't.
Because it is.
Every week, too.
It's highly elevated above the road, but well behind and not high. So you can't see it. You have to know it's there.
Okay, so
I guess I'm not sure how you're really going to see this building other than driving by it, and even the access way isn't going to have much of a direct line of sight of the site.
I think it's the preserving the vistas and
from the neighbor's perspective. And you drive by North Pacific Mini Storage, and all you see is the sun and animal magnetism doggy daycare, which you know is up there. You don't see them from where you don't even know they're there.
We have Bainbridge self-storage over on Sportsman Club Road. You drive by it just kind of like this, and you can see it through the trees. You see the office, and then it goes
that,
way
that
downhill.
That is something that we should aspire to. Something that exists.
Exactly.
And we have to live with it.
I understand from the design.
We're trying to do better, and I know you are, too.
Yeah.
I know you are, too.
Yeah.
But,
when I looked at the species and the placement, there's very few or almost no evergreens facing the school. On that side of the building, they're concentrated around the pond. And there's nothing in the buffer. I mean, it's a pretty thin line of plantings. And I don't think there's any substantial evergreens between the school and building number one. Like, you might correct me if you look on your plan, but I don't think there are. So I think that maybe, you know, again, I think you need to be able to build your building, but I think you've got to be good neighbors about how it looks and hiding it. What about signage?
Oh, we haven't established the location of signage, but we typically have signage at the office building and whatever permitting allows for in
the
city.
So you're not going to have a monument sign out on the road?
We actually haven't even gotten that far yet because it wasn't a requirement of the design.
So, okay, that'd be something that we would be interested in to look at the next time.
I mean,
before we go forward.
Okay.
If it's just on the building, that's one thing, depending, that goes to the sign ordinance.
Is there certain things you would like to see if there is a monument sign allowed for in that zone?
Well, I just think it just depends on the location of it, the size of it, whether it's lit, whether it's not lit, you know. You know, try to give you an opportunity to advertise on the road, but not so much that it, you know, detracts from the experience.
I should note that a new sign ordinance is going to be coming up for a public hearing this month.
Okay.
And it's going to be issued on September 20th. I would take a look at that because that's probably what is going to apply to whatever you do.
And I would strongly, if you're taking notes about what to do, I would strongly recommend more dense plantings opposite the school. Certainly, if it's a deciduous forest, consider more plantings in that setback. And really think about that cabling. It's not expensive.
Yeah, I like the cabling.
Up the side of the building, because it'll really help you make that building.
I actually like that in larger, more mature trees, just because when you have a 10-foot area to work within, they're going to outgrow their, you know, the area they can actually survive in pretty quick there if they're up against the building.
Yeah, I think if you're really careful about them and you stack, that landscape plan's pretty sort of stacked together. You know, if you take it visually and have stand at the school, maybe have some of the folks at the school stand there and go, here's a stick 20 feet tall, what do you see? Here's a stick 20 feet tall, what do you see? You might find that with fewer trees, but being very sight sensitive, you might actually do a really good job of being able to hide the most critical spots and then fill in with those green vegetation closer to the building. Because, you know, the closer, the more you come this way, a shorter thing hides a taller thing. Then if you try and put a tall thing over there, you can put a much shorter thing here and still hide the building. Because I think, you know, apart from the traffic and those other issues, but those are within your right as an owner of the land to have those sorts of uses of the land, then to be a good neighbour, I think it's what can you do after you listen to all those comments and see what you can do about them.
So it's 3:00 and we only have about 10 more minutes. So I want to summarize some of the things we heard, but I want to make sure everybody here, anybody has a comment that they'd like to make, Charles or anybody have a comment, and then I'd like to summarize.
You can't see too much from that here.
Right.
But I was wondering, the curve, the entrance that goes onto the Bay Road, I think.
Right.
It was mentioned it's kind of curve and stuff, so you can't look directly in it.
Yes.
You have to be careful when that curve is there, because there are plenty of people coming out at that angle. So
Well, it's set up at on the drawing, it's set up at a 90 degrees to Day Road. But once you get in, it curves over so you don't see a long vista of the road. So it is a 90 degree intersection, which would be standard practice. But is that your question?
What's on the second floor? I'm interested.
What's on storage?
Second floor units?
At grade level at the upper section of the building are units, and then as you drive down the hill, you can curve around to the lower section of units. So it's two floors, but they're all accessed from grade.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there's no elevator in the building?
No.
No.
Okay.
The other one is habitat. Nobody's talking for the squirrels. I am. When you build that fence, make sure that it's animal friendly. You know, it doesn't take a lot of extra design to make sure that the size animals that live in that area can get in and out somehow, and not through the front gate, through their natural habitat where they live.
Mm-hmm. We're definitely open to options.
Yeah, you know, and if you just do a little research, I'm sure you'll come up with something wonderful. You know, our goal is to say to everybody doing development on this island in the future that Bainbridge Island will be one of the nicest places to live in the United States of America, no question. And some of the most valuable real estate. And I think as a business person, if you look ahead to the use of this property, start thinking about what does it look like in 100 years? What did you do to help us preserve this incredible gem that we have? It's the biggest gated community in America, probably, given the island size. And so people are going to really want to live here. We want you guys as developers to really win awards, show the rest of the world how it's done. Because if you don't, we just get more of the same. And we're all living on this planet, so do what you can. And I'll be more than glad to give you any help I can give you at no charge about what other ideas we have. Because, you know, that's part of our job, is to help you do the best you can. But be thinking about the best you can do.
Great.
Yeah. Okay.
Love to get your information.
Yeah, okay.
So let's summarize. So I want to make sure that we have a list of what we've talked about. Jane, we've been starting this new process whereby Carla was writing up, or maybe it was you, I can't remember, who was at the last meeting?
Carla.
Okay. Then we're going to go through a list of issues that we thought were topics were important to suggestions. Mm-hmm. If you would take notes and put them up and then hand them off. And, yes?
I just have one more thing to say about this project.
Yeah.
Let me wrap it up. Is it in this the zoning for this? Basically, they're taking the 50-foot minimum side and rear and front setbacks, mm-hmm. but the setbacks based on the scale, the city may increase this to a max to 100 feet, mm-hmm. depending on the type, scale, and intensity of the proposed use, subject mm-hmm. to site plan review. And I would suggest that. Those setbacks, those 100-foot setbacks are absurd.
So if you put 100-foot setbacks in place, nobody could do anything with that property.
It's 5 acres.
Yeah, but if you look at what you're doing there, when you would have a tiny, narrow lot that somebody would have to buy 5 acres that... I don't know what you could do. Even the
Well, and I may be misreading this, but I was just going through the setbacks for the baby code.
Based on scale.
So it'd be a long, narrow building, and ugly.
Well, or something else that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Right? Or something else that's wonderful. Because it can all be wonderful.
Well, yeah, is there a balance because the school is so close to the road, and, you know, there's an offset somehow?
Could there be more of a setback there?
Right, more of the front of the property.
Although, who's the neighbor that looks at the rest of it? I mean, that's not just the school that we're filming.
That's the
and it's the scenic corridor, too. I mean, we talk about the revision of 305 as a scenic corridor, and I think that issue should come up as well.
And that's part of the head house idea that, you know, I don't know, having a CMU, a metal panel building,
it's going to fit the
materiality really needs to be.
Right.
Well, I don't know if you get. I'm sure you guys all know this, but based on the construction hazard type, there's only certain materials you can actually use to build one of these buildings.
Yeah.
You can't use wood or any other combustible materials.
Right.
So,
unfortunately.
But you know, just like when I've been getting these architectural designs from Europe and so on, you know, everybody's facing these same challenges,
and they're rising to the challenge. So that's what we want you guys to do.
So what I'd like to do is do a summary. We're not making any decisions today. You know, we've got another meeting to come back. So I think we'd like to outline what we think are the major topics that we have concerns about and we've discussed here. And then you guys can go back and think about how you want to respond to it, what you want to do or whatever. And then you know where we're at going into the last meeting, which would be more of an approval meeting.
Okay. So I just want to understand when we come back for the second meeting, is there going to be something like 100-foot foot buffer taken into account? Is that going to be established in the design review, or is that something that could be changed further down the road? At what point do we determine that the 50-foot buffer that was stated in the pre-application meeting that was acceptable is going to be going to stay because we spent a lot of money to further develop?
Sure, absolutely. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, if I don't know where Laurel got that. If there is a decision to be made to do that, the way I'd like to say it is that we would, and I'm speaking for the DRB here now, so I want everybody to chime in here, is that we have one of the concerns we have is the buffer between the school and your project. Consider increasing that buffer as much as you can. Maybe going to 70, we're not going to prescribe 100 feet or something, you know, but if you can increase it, and if you can do a couple of things I want to talk about understory trees and evergreens, and do those things, and then, yes.
I think I was actually misreading the part of the code for the 100 feet. So
the law is clear about what you're allowed to do.
Yeah,
the codes are the laws, and the laws are clear, and as long as you're within the laws.
Let Kelly do research on that and see what
you're waiting for.
I still got to print. There's a lot of code here.
Let me just tell you what I think our concerns are, and then we'll see what.
Okay.
Oh, we'll go from there, okay? And then. So let's start with the buffer and that kind of stuff as being one of the issues. We are concerned about the buffer on the two sides, the east and west sides, towards the
But also
the veterinary.
This one is fronts onto the highway too. So.
Oh, that's on the highway, right? It is.
So
yeah. We want to make sure that's not visible. That's definitely sure. We know that now. We don't know that.
Well, I haven't looked at the numbers up there, the topography, but if you look at the numbers there and a little, you're looking like that, so I'd be shocked if you'll see much of anything up there, but
it is, yeah, there is a lot of topography change from there, but I think it's just making sure that prevents it, and then whatever.
So please put an elevation that shows that.
To Don's point, you say that, you might be right, you might not be right, we don't know. If you do a section through there and show it, then that's great.
So
then we would know. Then we would know that.
Illustrated
both sides.
View
both
from
sides.
The highway. What you see.
Sides very different.
Now,
as objective as you can make it.
I agree, but in order to give a true perspective of building from the highway,
it doesn't have to be a perspective.
No, it's a section.
In order to show the section to show that it's shielded from this buffer, you're going to have to survey and show every single tree that's within that 50-foot buffer.
No, I'm not.
I mean,
that.
Well, that's the argument that's being made.
No,
you can see
all you have to do is go down the highway, get on the highway, walk down the road, and find a viewpoint. Looking at that point, take a picture.
Okay.
Scale the photograph.
Yeah.
And put your building. Get an architect that they know how to do that to take a building and take a photograph, scale it. And put the building in it and see where the building height is compared to the trees. And then you've got an accurate, you know, visual of that place. And then we at least see that there's no impact or whatever. I mean,
okay.
If that's...
You think you have
so
that? I have some examples.
We need to really get home
with
it.
Keep going.
So, again, on the side thing, I think we are concerned about the buffer. So we'll just leave it at that. How you want to deal with that is your choice. Some of the issues you could do related to scale of the building is a second issue. But on the buffer to the school, you could do some of the things that Peter talked about with the cabling and some vegetation against the wall. You could put in more evergreen trees. We could put in understory trees, especially evergreens like coastal redwoods and things like that that would block someone's standing there. We had concerns about the height of the fence, and I'm still a little confused as to the hog fence versus the chain link fence. So I'm not even sure.
Hog fence is the square fence.
Yeah, it's the square
fence. In popular parlance.
Yeah, that's what I think of it as.
It's the welded metal.
Yeah, and I don't know how far along it came, but we were just showing fencing around the site,
So that's a question we want you to address. More understory evergreen trees, fencing height. I think we want to go to a higher height, maybe to 8 feet.
Yeah.
Possible.
Yeah. Clarification.
Sorry.
When you get a chance, can I go back on the clarification for fencing?
Yep.
Sure.
So there's fencing for security for their development, and then there's fencing to help ensure the safety of the children next door.
Yep.
So I don't know if you could talk a little bit more about you want a higher fence to protect the children?
Well, I was thinking, so I saw two things. So one was children, but I saw another one was vandalism over the fence under there.
Mm-hmm.
So I just immediately went to 8 feet. Maybe that's not, I'm not trying to prescribe something, eight feet. But I mean, I think there's kind of two issues, isn't there? There's children's safety. And then
trying to keep people out of it.
So
you can probably come up.
We're open to a larger fence. Yeah. Usually jurisdictions want to.
Right.
Okay, but then
if it's going to be metal, make it green. Don't make it metal.
Oh, yeah, like green coat.
You did. We are going to have to give you one departure on the things, which is an obvious one, which is you don't want trails through the project. And the guidelines call for trails. So we're going to depart. That's a departure. So instead of one of the departures, you know, administratively, there's a departure. I mean, we're not going to ask to have a trail go through your project.
Maybe wildlife trails, though.
Wildlife trails back to the fence and that. Yes.
Well, then the fence could come closer to the buildings.
So how are they going to get
it? And then the fence...
The wildlife trails are in the 100-foot setback, which I did read that correctly. That it can be. It can require 100-foot
so
setback.
So that's... Are you able to get that, Jane? Poor Jane.
I didn't hear that clearly. Yeah. You said
what was that?
Well, it just said that the fence can come closer to the building so that the 50 and 100-foot... The 100-foot setbacks, which actually the city can require, become the wildlife trails.
So you're saying put the fence in closer to the building?
For the wildlife. Yeah. But I mean, there could be a kind of secondary wildlife permeable fence, you know, at the perimeter borders.
The fence doesn't have to be on your boundary, and that's up to you. But
I guess the buildings are on the boundary, so I'm not sure what you guys are...
The buildings
are don't fence on the property line. Closer to the building.
Yeah,
they're talking about the
building. Oh, just like all the way up to the drive aisle. Like all the way up to the drive aisle, lining that so the retention pond's exposed.
Yes.
Okay.
It
would look better. It would look better. That's a great suggestion.
And so, with your detention pond, you love detention ponds.
I do.
Right?
So,
there are detention ponds that aren't really wildlife friendly, and then there's fabulous wildlife friendly detention ponds.
That was a thought I had. If you flip the bar building and the detention pond, so that it's not a solid wall against the school, you made that detention pond into something.
Now that's interesting.
So it's not, you know.
Well, this is the low point.
It's downhill.
They can't really do that because it's moving towards the wetland. You'd have to be.
It's a natural.
Well, it's a
flow right there where water drains right now.
Well, it's a bowl, so it's actually going over to the right.
There is a natural outflow right there right now. You can see
with the amount of pump.
Actually, the low point is down here. This is where the wetland, the pond should be anywhere down there.
There's a draw on the
double. So, I think Peter's argument is that if you have an engineer, sorry for engineers, they tend to make very rectilinear ponds and whatnot. And if you have your landscape architect look at it and shape it so that it looks natural, and if you have plants that come in and do that, don't mean to be offensive to engineers, but that would be a thing to make the pond look a little more natural looking. I think that was his point. We're going to give you a departure from number 8 because that is the trail, just to say that that's you know, which is pretty standard. We've got the vegetation cable to the east wall of the school, fencing height.
I'm not just limiting it to the east wall of the school.
You know. Well, around the whole building. It's
well,
probably,
it's
better.
But I'd love to see whatever you came up with.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. Then the other big issue was the scale, which we've talked about a little bit, about the length of the building. I think we're still concerned about the 35-foot CMU wall that Michael talked about. And if there's a way to reduce that and still maintain the structure, that would be something to look at, if you could.
What would be an architect's solution to scale, for example, in that long building? If you had your dream, what would you do off the top, right? But how do you break that scale up? We use the word articulation, right? Which is to try and change the way the mass is.
Well, it looks like it's a single slope roof. Is that right? So part of it is getting rid of the single slope because that's what's driving the height.
Right.
What are the other modulations you can make to that to bring it down?
I think that's captured in Design Guideline 10.
Yeah. 10. So, yeah. Okay. So those are, Jane, were you able to magically capture those or not?
Well, let me read back to you.
Okay.
Consider increasing buffer between school and project on east and west sides as well as the State Route 305 corridor. Would like to see view from State Route 305. Scale of building, specifically the 35-foot CMU wall. Height and material of fencing, taking into consideration safety of children and facility. They would like the fence closer to facility. More understory evergreen trees. Lack of trails is a departure from design guideline
number eight. Yep.
Detention pond design for wildlife.
And I think just on that second one, we'd like to see view from SR 305.
Yeah.
They want to see.
Yes, you did.
The how do you capture those? I always have trouble with that one. The site section. They want to see a rendering of the view of the building from SR 305.
Well, buildings is important too because all those buildings on the illustrative.
And the illustrative, view
all the buildings.
Yeah.
As it goes down the topography.
Would like to see site section rendering of building view from State Route 305.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if it's from State Route 305. It's just parallel the two long.
But those are separate things. We're talking there about that corner down there where 305 is, and then you were talking about a site section through the entire three buildings to show them all in one, one image.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So that would. So we'd like an additional site section that showed all three buildings scaled in one drawing.
Why don't you add elevations to that too? And I can see all three buildings.
At one place. Just put them all in one place, one drawing, instead of breaking them into three separate things. That would look better. It'd be more
pictorial.
More pictorial and more, I don't want to say honest, but more true, more actual what it looks like. Yeah.
Just to make sure, we should also be able to see what it looks like from the Bay Road intersection. So not just from the 305, not just from here, but also from that intersection.
If you could see it from
height.
Okay.
From Gay Road.
Yeah, there are a lot of trees in
here.
Okay.
Thank you.
So their next step will be we'll have a second pre-application conference and a public participation meeting.
Second pre-application.
Okay. Yeah.
Not with us, but they would
do
that.
A second pre-application.
Well.
Or would we just do another round of design review based on the input?
So, as far as we're concerned, the DRB, you can come to the final meeting if you feel like you've addressed issues that we're concerned about. If you're concerned about that, you're more than welcome to have another meeting. But we know that it's expensive, and that's something you and Kelly can discuss, or that's up to you.
Okay.
You don't need to come back until the final meeting if you feel comfortable with what you're bringing back.
Mm-hmm. I'd say we'll get together for an hour long
of being accepted
staff
and getting a vote
and
do a
public participation meeting and then just apply.
And how can we find out when these meetings are?
Well, it's a big one that we want to figure out. increasing the buffer.
The question was that, how does the public find out when the next DRB, when they schedule the next meeting? That doesn't go in the portal.
The next public meeting would be, you would get notified, area owners within 500 feet of the property would get notice, public notice.
Of the DRB meeting?
The public participation meeting with the Planning Commission.
Is that what you were asking?
Any relevant meeting?
Yeah.
I would like to know when it's coming up.
So we meet the first and third Monday of each month.
First and third Mondays. Okay.
Right. So we have something called a listserv. Mm-hmm. I'll let James say the speech.
Go ahead.
You do it.
So if you go to the city's website and go to the city's website, on the front page, it will say
City Notifications.
Okay. And then you want to City Communications. And you can actually pick on here, put in your email address, and you can go through proposed land use actions is what you want to sign up for.
Okay.
That will give you notification of the ERB, the Planning Commission, okay. Any public
that's
participation.
Any specific action that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Thank
you. We appreciate it very much. Okay. All right. We want to take a 2-minute break and call in the next
I printed it down to be able to use the, I think that actually it's still in my scanner, it's the big one, it's still in my scanner, because I scaled it down in order to be able to do this, because I had this from the Kitsap County GIS, that's why I scaled this to match that, so that's to show how it is, the scale of it, because there's no, you know, there's, they don't show like the adjacent building, which is
right,
you know. Island School building is just like right there. You know, it's kind of reminds me of like the hotel. You know, it's like, wait a minute, it's just like way out of scale. I mean, this is the same square footage.
I would say too,
but these buildings have much area.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
This one, I mean, this is a beautiful kind of modern building with columns, it's got windows, it's got modularity. And this, you know, the Island School is the same. It's got lots of, you know, the footprint is about the same size as well. These buildings. This is your house.
Which is like 75 for Melbourne proper. And then I'm
going
to go back to Melbourne.
And it doesn't provide anything
to
the
ocean. Yes! I'm going to do that tour, and then I'm going to do one on the river as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's just like it's all just well, 67,000 square feet in each unit is, you know, maybe.
I know what you do. I'm just leaving. You know, it's done in this thing.
You're breaking in the box.
Yeah.
For seven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this, I mean, this is just. And I just did a calculation. It's still allowed 37%. You know, which is kind of like a residential percentage of a lot of this is very lot coverage.
And so,
they pushed it exactly, like they maxed out their
So at a certain point, you know, I think that was a long way. But it's just a function of, like, oh, it's like the same terms as this.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't say what we are.
The
ordinance that we have in designing these are, it doesn't say what we're for.
Okay.
Yeah, we can make a building.
It literally doesn't say what we're for. It says what our rules are.
We're running behind.
Okay.
Thank you for your patience. The first project went over a little bit, so thank you.
Sorry about that.
That's the way it is.
We'll still give you your full time.
Okay.
We have 5 minutes. No, I'm just kidding. So, Vincent Road Transfer Station, you guys have met with us before. I think this group was already in place. No? You may not have seen it before. No? Or maybe it was before you guys. Okay, we have new members. We have new members that came in June.
Okay.
So, possibly Kelly or you could, you know, do it just a 2-minute overview again for the new people of the project, and then we'll go on. That's possible.
Sure. I'll do my little quick intro. They are redeveloping the existing Bainbridge disposal property.
Mm-hmm.
They're constructing a new office building, so moving the office building from where it is on Newbrook or Swartzen's Club.
Mm-hmm.
A new comfort, what they're calling comfort station, which I think is for employees, truck wash station, and adding additional parking because they're also moving their trucks from the Sportsman's mm-hmm. Club. And the property is within the R0.4 district, which is a residential district. So this is a little bit different than the last one you saw, which was business industrial zoning. This is residential zoning, so it requires a conditional use permit.
Oh,
okay. That's a good overview.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And the acres and the size is?
Sorry, the size of the
property.
5.8.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. I'll start then. First of all, I'll give you a little history of the site. The site has been in its current use for the last 80 years. We're not intending to change the use in any way, shape, or form. It will continue to be Bainbridge disposal sort of thing. We got off on the wrong foot. No fault of the city, no fault of ours. It just happened that way. We had a pre-application conference on August 22nd, 2017, and everybody thought that was just fine. It was such that we scheduled a public hearing, and we've had a public hearing on this project already.
We had a public participation meeting.
Yeah. Okay. So we're a little bit mixed up, but I think we're back on track now.
Before you go on, could you actually introduce yourself? Because some people may not.
I'm sorry.
No, I didn't ask it. Sure.
Introduce Heather Church. You can introduce
yourself. Heather Church, Bainbridge Disposal.
Okay. She's the owner of Bainbridge Disposal. Okay. Miles Yonick, I'm an architect and planner representing Bainbridge Disposal.
And I'm Nicole. I am a project coordinator for Miles Yonick.
Okay.
And just to go back for a bit, at the pre-application conference, some of the items that came up, or the key items that came up, were maintain the vegetative screening around on the site, meet tree retention, meet with the DRB for land use permits, and have a public participation meeting, which of course we've done, again meet with the design review board, which was mentioned a couple of times. Then we had the public participation meeting. Then it was not clear where we should go from there, so we applied to the city, to Gary Christensen at the time, and said, what should we be doing? And he came back with a letter to us that says, this requires site plan review and minor conditional use permit. The city then came back and said, well, minor conditional use permit is not necessarily applicable to this project. We need a major conditional use permit. Mm. And we went through and looked at the major conditional use permit requirements, and I think that's correct. It is major. It is major. Can we have a slide of the site? I'll just jump to the site now and come back to these issues. What I'll do is just describe what we're proposing for the site.
Okay.
Aerial site? It's a site plan.
Oh, I guess.
I saw it on there.
Do
yeah.
Revision 2. That.
Right below aerial pictures.
Yeah.
You'll see the site plan. Yeah.
Oh, it's just a whole submitted package. So if you scroll down, it's all attached to one thing.
Yeah. Oh, went. Keep going. That's not an actual site plan, but it'll work.
I think that's site plan because it had all the trees.
The site plan should be in there.
Yeah.
Towards the end.
I did it in the order that they were requested. Go to the next one, which is an aerial photo, which shows a little
bit. Okay, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. What we're proposing is to come in from Don Palmer Drive or Vincent Road across a very interesting prescriptive easement access, which has apparently been there for 80 years. Nobody knows anything quite about it. It's a shared access with the city decant facility, and they have an easement over our property all around the perimeter of the property to get to the city property. We have adequate documentation of that easement. It's a good solid easement. Basically, we'll be using this same easement to come in administrative, about 1,500 square foot administrative building, just a little tiny building for to pay your bill and keep the records and things like that. A small, what we call driver's comfort station. We call it a driver comfort station because that's what Kitsap Transit calls their driver's restroom. Basically, this is a small lunchroom with lockers for the drivers as they come in. This is parking for transfer bins. I'm sorry about that. It was supposed to have been turned off. I'm definitely sorry about that.
Everybody else is turning in there as well.
A warning to others.
Parking for the vehicles that will be moving from the Sportsman Club Road site. Basically, this is a removing Bainbridge disposal from the Sportsman Club Road site and consolidating all the operations up on the old Bainbridge disposal site. So we'll be parking the refuse collection trucks along here, the transfer trucks along here. What happens? This is a relatively complex procedure. These collection trucks come in during the day, unload their equipment, unload their debris here in what we call the transfer shed. Then the tractors pick up these containers back into here, pick that up, and stage themselves for movement the following morning. Then they take the refuse transfer to waste management disposal at the airport in South Kitsap County Industrial Park. In addition to the driver's transportation, they come in, park their cars here, change their clothes here, pick up their trucks here, and they drive out for the day. Over here, we're proposing a small, what we're calling a truck service facility. Basically, it's not a truck maintenance facility, it's a service facility. Little things like changing windshield wipers, maybe changing oil, changing tire, like that, but it's not a maintenance facility as such. Again, along the side are the transfer bins, the collection totes, and whatnot. On this side of the site, which is a very interesting site, you'll see a lot of nomenclature along here, and I would urge you to read all of this. It's very interesting. This has been here for a long time. It's the public side of the operation, where the general public brings their recyclable materials from used washers and dryers to electronics equipment to just paper trash bottles, whatnot, things like that. You'll see some more transfer bins stored in here. They dump it into the various bins, then a tractor comes around, loads these up, and they're off.
Are you correct that everything that's green there is leaving, right?
Say that again one more.
Everything that's green within your site, that represents vegetation, is that correct?
That is correct.
And that's all essentially leaving.
No, it's not. This portion right here, which is amounts right there, which amounts to approximately 27,000 square feet,
yep.
is leaving. We're proposing it to be leaving.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
We'd like to retain more than that, but given the necessity of the function, mm-hmm. we just don't quite have the room anymore. I think that's for it for us. Adam can explain the stormwater situation, which mm-hmm. is an interesting option.
Is my site planned in there?
I think it is.
That's the next one.
Go down. Is that it? No.
That takes care of the green area you're talking about.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh,
there
we
go.
There
it
is.
Okay.
I'm not sure that we can.
Stand on the side.
Thank you.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. So the storm drainage system. So just to give us kind of context, right? This is the old landfill on the island. It's been around there forever, and it's capped. So it's not a place actually that we want to try to put water in the ground. Right? We're trying to actually prevent water from getting in the ground here to leach out. So there is just, and we did actually look up here for some spots because, right, the landfill doesn't come all the way up. And we found just a very marginal spot here where we could potentially get some infiltration, but it wouldn't be anything that was significant just because of the grade of it and the poor quality of the soils. So we kind of started from that standpoint. We've got a site that we don't really want to get water into, but we want to protect everything downstream. Because we've got, transfer station.
Yeah.
So the idea behind it is that we're going to develop this area. We're actually going to take this dirtier area, and we're going to take that water into a system where we got a pre-settling basin, a large lined under-drained rain garden, and then to a detention pond, and then out to the main drainage system on the property that's shared with the city system. Now, because we are removing some trees up in this area, we're also looking to replant, I can't quite see, it's over 200 trees. 278 trees.
What would the square footage of that be? If you're taking 27,000 away.
I think it was around
15,600.
Okay. Yeah. So we are trying to replace the function.
Yep.
And also that reduces the amount of water that we have to deal with in the beginning anyway. So we felt this was a good compromise for this particularly difficult site to handle stormwater. And so we are meeting both the flow control and the low impact design criteria in that pond, so that's why that pond is big.
So I'm just curious with the dirty water you're talking about. You call it dirty, but when the water, Are you going to have maintenance issues in the future with that?
Yeah, so that's potentially how you start with the
pre-settling.
That's, you
have to clean that out. And,
yeah, so yeah. The idea is that most of your big sediment is going to actually settle out in trash in there, and then you would maintain.
You'll
that.
Have to maintain that. Yeah. Okay.
Which they do a lot of maintenance out here anyway, so they're already kind of set up for that. Okay. So that's
okay.
In a nutshell, that's the storm drain.
Okay. Makes sense to me. Okay. Do you want to look at the buildings? Or what have you changed since the last time we
met? We didn't have any buildings at all last time, at least I don't think so. We have what we call the driver's comfort station, which may be on there. Do you care to look at any of these photos, by the way? It gives us a good, very good sense of what that site is now.
I think we've all been there.
Okay. That's good.
Could I ask this? This is a business, correct?
This is
free enterprise American business. This
there
is a business.
Now, this is what we're looking at, is a simple building for the administration office, about 1,500 square feet. We see it as textured or patterned concrete masonry units on the wainscot area, and probably a batten and board system from the wainscot to the plate height, probably a metal roof, color to be determined. And move on to the next slide back up. This is the driver's comfort station as such. We had gone actually into construction documents on this before it was clear that we needed a conditional use permit. And we started to file for the building permit, and that's when the conditional use permit came up. Back one more, please. As you can see, it's about a 625 square foot building. With just a restrooms, locker area, and a small kitchen area, and we'll probably set a table in here for a lunchroom sort of thing. Outdoor dining outside for nice weather like today, small provision for employee amenities and such. Okay. And back one more. And there's a sketch of what it might look like, again with the concrete masonry units at the wainscot, batten and board siding up to the plate height, and exposed trusses on the outdoor dining area and a metal roof. Very simple. The truck maintenance facility, which was back there, go forward again. That is the current truck maintenance facility at the Business Park Lane site, and we would be proposing a pre-manufactured metal building, probably very similar to this, mm-hmm. at the new site.
So my first question is, how are you going to wow us with the fact that you want to take away 27,000 square feet of forest and the animals that live there? Yeah. And for the comfort of a few workers, but to the discomfort of those trees and animals, how are you going to wow us with mitigation for doing that? Especially in the fact that you're going to put 12,000 square feet of trees, good on you. But are they sort of just a row of trees planted, or is it going to be this really environmentally friendly place with snags and rocks and places for animals to go? Are you going to wow us with what you're taking away from all of us on the most beautiful island in the United States of America?
You need to remember the context of it. We don't control the rest of the property.
I understand that, but that's a good excuse for not finding a really well way to deal with the fact that if you do it, and the guys down the street do it, and everybody else does it, we're going to have less. And we're at a time in the critical part of the future of this planet where incremental removal is something that we all have to think about and deal with. So good enough, basic enough, isn't good enough on Bainbridge Island. And I think that's why I want you to wow us with something amazing that's going to replace the 27,000 square feet that you want to take away.
I see your point, and it's well taken. Apparently it didn't get into the slides. We are proposing a landscape plan, which I can merely talk about now, because I don't have a drawing on hand. We are proposing to plant as many of those trees as possible within the site itself. And I've prepared a landscape plan with, in addition to the number of trees,
yep.
In addition to the mix of trees, and to attempt to restore the understory, which is probably one of the most important things, is being lost.
Yeah.
Our original tree survey indicates that most of those 27,000 square, most of the 27,000 square feet of trees that are being removed are diseased. Not all, but most. And we do have a certified arborist and a documentation to say that.
Right.
But restoring the understory, I think, is important. Trying to restore it within the confines of the paved areas and whatnot.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we're going to wow you with that.
Well, I think for every applicant, we wanted to get out of this room, that everybody who comes in here goes away and goes, my God, these people are actually talking about making an example of Bainbridge Island as being at least one place in the United States of America.
And doing it
where we're doing it way better than it's been done before.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're just looking to every architect, every applicant, and go spread the story, because I think we're going to get tougher and tougher on that, because the Design Review Board's brief is to really look at the comprehensive plan, and this is such an important site for all of us. We've got to dispose of it anyways. But we still look into everybody to come back with and say, look at what we've done that's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. So I'm very pleased at how much is coming back in vegetation, but it's the quality of that planting that's really important.
And I think there are really, there are precedents of really good disposal facilities to, you know, even locally in Richmond, to look at architecturally.
What's the best in the world, and let's do that.
And I guess the other thing that would really help me is to see a kind of like a flow diagram for the transfer trucks and all of that, to know that actually you have to push the comfort station up to that. I know that when I have been to the dock, that's what it's always been called, the transfer station. there's that vast space in front of the recycling areas where it's so vast that it's uncomfortable, because it feels unsafe, because you have no idea where, how, if the cars are moving this way, they're all, because there's so much space, there's no like navigation through it. And it seems to me that in that vastness of the space, some of that could be taken for a 600 square foot building and some other things. So, I mean, I guess to see like how the, that, to know that all of that vast space is actually required for the flow, and there's a way to kind of, you know, design navigation through the site before you just start to go cut, you know, the north.
Fully appreciate what you're saying. Just trying to squeeze it all in there.
Yes,
just as an example, we're not dealing with the site plan as such here yet, but we're totally relocating the entrance and the toll booth and all that stuff to provide stacking space and get it out. Right now we've got a mix of public and private functions crossing each other, and it's a real mess up there.
Yeah.
So we have studied that, and yes, we can produce that, I think, to show why we pushed out a little bit. Yeah.
One concern is the turning radius of the trucks, however. Truck and trailer requires a substantial amount of turning radius, and when you have two or three trucks up there at the same time, it requires a large...
Do they do like three-point turns, or they go in, they do a continuous three-point?
It depends which direction they're going.
I have a question on the bigger picture of things, the critical area ordinance. You guys presumably fall under that category, the critical area ordinance, and the need for an ARPA. Have you guys, does the city talk about that at all yet?
As it turns out, we made all of it, weren't aware of the ARPA, I was going to address the SAR, I'm sorry. The SAR is not required because we had started the process before the ordinance was developed, and we did ask the city for a written exemption, which we do have, that we're exempt from the SAR. I don't know about the ARPA, though.
Yeah, it precludes us from ARPA applying to the project.
So if you're exempt from site assessment review, you're also exempt from aquifer recharge protection area designation.
So, okay, I'm sure that's
there's
true.
There's a transition period
where the rules change.
The rules are changing, and we just have to be before that date.
So you're just taking that option, and Bill, you're back to Peter's question about doing great things. And you lucked out because you got in before the deadline.
Well, I don't know if lucked out is the...
No, we didn't. Well,
you're not having to do an ARPA,
no.
Right? So
we didn't do it to beat the deadline,
now.
By the way.
Well,
yeah,
no, but everyone's doing it now. We're just trying to encourage you, looking for carrots to give you, to get you to do, you know, the best you can.
Yeah.
That's all. We're not, you know, and it seems like ARPA's a good thing. It's useful.
Yeah, just because it's not required by this doesn't mean that you couldn't still go. But guess what?
I guess we're going to do it anyway.
We're going to do it anyway because we love Bainbridge Island, and we love our trees, and we love our environment, we love all our neighbours, and we want to do an absolutely extraordinary job. Because we're going to be looking to you guys constantly from now on for this.
No, I know.
Yeah, yeah. So, just the word's out.
Just, yeah, I mean, I don't want to, you know, not being kind, but, you know, if you do the minimum, that's not the best you can do. That's the worst you can do.
Well,
so I agree with that.
You know, and we always are looking for anything in any way to do better.
But if you came out and said, not only are we putting those trees there, guess what? They're all going to have bat houses in them. You know, it sounds silly. Sounds silly.
From an art standpoint, what would that look like here?
Yeah.
From an art standpoint?
Yeah.
I would get a really good design to figure that out.
I guess I'm wondering, would it be setting the rest of the forest aside? Is that
on this site in particular? What it would look like is retaining 65% of the native vegetation on the site, which is
so the project wouldn't happen.
It wouldn't happen.
Yeah. So that's what
I don't know that it wouldn't happen. I mean,
it would have to be rethought.
So
it could happen. It would have to be rethought.
Yeah. We are retaining 61%, by the way.
Yeah.
So if you look at, there isn't a lot of vegetation on this site existing, but I'm certain, you know, they could.
Yeah, no, we're not trying to make it impossible. We're trying to get the best that you can possibly do out of it.
And get at the principles behind. I mean, the 65% is a lot, but I mean, the principles of that, the reason to do it, is what we want.
This is a concern that was raised a couple of years ago.
Oh, it was?
Concerned about how much vegetation was being removed and the intent of the design guidelines to retain vegetation.
Yeah. Right. We've actually reduced, I mean, it might not look like it, but we've actually reduced how much than when we originally came in with the project.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In response to those
goals. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just, it looks, when you look at it with a sort of square with a line of trees around it.
They are subject to the moratorium. Yes, their site plan review in R0.4.
R0.4, they are.
Yeah. That's so major site plan review. Other than
you're exempt. Okay. No.
So other than in the core or business industrial, major site plan review is subject to the moratorium.
Kelly, unless they had a pre-application meeting on the schedule before the adoption of the moratorium.
They don't have a pre-app scheduled, I don't know.
That would be the exception. So.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I mean, I don't know yet how the director is handling if they came for a pre-application meeting 2 years before the change in the land use process. I don't know how she.
I think we're exempt from the moratorium. Yeah.
I think the retention policy should be.
Mm-hmm.
What are the. Let's say you're moving the parking, some of the parking, and an office at Sportsman's Club to this location.
Are we doing what?
You're moving an office that's currently at Sportsman's Club and parking that's there to this site.
And the truck maintenance facility. Yeah.
Okay. So, are there going to be just the same amount of cars that are coming through here, with that transformation and the same amount of trucks.
Theoretically, it will be the same amount of trucks.
Because they're kind of working on a loop, and right now they have a start and a stop in a different location. You're just trying to bring...
They'll make one last major move during the 24-hour period. Yeah.
Okay. So is the site they're on, Sportsman Club, going to be vacated? Is that just city land that's...
What are they doing with that? Yeah.
Or is that...
They're going to build apartments.
Affordable housing.
No, not storage. That was a long meeting.
Now, wait a minute. But the land is city property.
No.
It's your property. Yeah, my property.
This is private.
No, I understand that. Okay, but the occupants currently are public city. You were saying that the city.
Well, she operates.
Well, so it's not the
I understand that. No, I'm talking about
public city. The stuff that's here. The city property.
Yes.
We're completely. We're 5.87 acres within a 30-acre city property.
And we share an easement road with the city.
Entirely surrounded.
Okay,
we can't get there from here.
I'm sorry. I'm just tired. But you're saying that the building and the parking on Sportsman Club Road is moving to the site.
Yes. To the site.
The function is.
Okay.
The function.
So, Jane, this surrounding property, at one time, so Kitsap County gave us this lovely landfill. And at one time it was this big piece. And this piece was carved off and sold to Bainbridge Disposal.
I see.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? You have any plans for the bit that you're vacating?
That's what I was asking.
Yeah. In other words,
what are you doing with
is there any mitigation that you could do there for the forest that you're taking away here on the old block?
Well, we'll continue to do some maintenance at the facility.
Oh, okay.
So you're still going to use it for
now,
for your business?
That's what I was asking.
Okay.
So we could donate trees to the city to park on their property.
We don't have a plan for that, actually.
Yeah, I'm serious about
that. There is no provision for that.
Can we go back to the site plan?
Yeah, sorry.
What's
the other one?
Thank you. I'm going to renew my discussion of the last meeting, of the last people, regarding your... Oh, the next one with the pond. So I want to see the drainage plan. The stormwater.
That one.
Even with sideways. That's fine. So again, same thing. It's kind of square and rectilinear and kind of engineering. And is there a way to... I mean, I really... So I'm a big believer that churches should look like churches. Civic buildings should look like civic buildings. I don't think that transfer stations need to look like a transfer station.
Any way we can
make it look, you know, more natural and more, I mean, it seems like a small
like
thing.
Like a church or school or something?
Well, something. I'm wondering why it's a square, why you've got a square bar there and it doesn't look more natural and all that.
I like to draw squares because of the most efficient space.
Of course it is.
So the longer you make it, the actual bigger the font is.
Right, or the more engineering you got to do.
So anyways, that's
a placeholder.
That's
a placeholder.
To show that, hey, this is how much volume we really need.
Okay.
That it could be a different shape.
I think it'd be great for it to be a different shape.
Yeah.
And for the trees to look a little bit more like a forest useful space. Because animals can't move into something that looks like that.
Just to let you, so what the constraint that we've got is that's the property line.
Yeah.
Right, they kind of put that property line right up
against the square, against the...
Yeah.
If we were to respond to that, if we were to make an arrangement with the city to allow us to plant on the city property, so we could do something... With
more
that.
Interesting.
You think that's a reasonable
approach? It's great to ask. So it's a good question.
We would support that, I think. Yeah. In that sense. We would support that.
Yeah, it might be a can of worms for you.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
I see you.
But it's a great thing. Yeah. A good thing
to
ask.
Yeah.
I love that you asked that question.
And then the question is, like, if the comfort station can be, you know, somewhat more comfortable. I mean, if there's a way, you've designed a minimal facility for people to take their breaks. But my question then, you know, if there could be an integration of the site with the place where they take lunch and the pond that they get to look out over in some way. Or so, you know, there's some way to begin to integrate the new construction with the new landscape plan so that it's, you know, just a better, just a better site solution. And there's, you know, just this vast space in the middle of this. I know you need it for the trucks, but it just seems to me that
I think there are some reasons though to have it up in the forest area. Mm-hmm.
If there's still a forest there.
And shadier.
Right.
It's shadier, yeah.
And they're there, you know, minimal in the morning, just as the public works.
They grow coffee and they go to the truck.
Yeah. Right, they should grow coffee and go. And I don't think they want to spend extra time there.
No, I understand that.
But again, in everything that we do here from now on, we want people around the world to go, wow, look what they did with that.
Yeah.
Why should we have anything less than that? And as a design review board, that's what we're asking for. Okay. So that someone in Latvia goes, wow, look at what they did. Because if you don't do it here with all the environmentalists that live here, where on earth is it going to happen if it doesn't happen here? Well, so let's make it happen here.
I'll just reinforce what you're saying. If you look at the City of Seattle refuse depositories in Wallingford and in South Park, gorgeous buildings. Mm. Yeah. Just gorgeous.
They function really well.
Yeah.
In St. Paul, Minnesota, where I grew up, the power company, when they had substations, they actually built them in a house. So just because these were all residential neighborhoods, so the power station was, for all intents and purposes, just another house.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't even, with wires, of course, coming
out.
But that was like, you know, 50 years ago, and they just decided they wanted everything to be beautiful.
No, I understand where you're coming from. I really do, yeah.
Man, these things cost money, but I think, you know, Bay Ridge is going to be some of the most expensive real estate in the West Coast of the United States. It's inevitable. And so, you know, ultimately, the people that own these facilities and land and developments and whatever, they will see a price rise if they hang on to them long enough that's commensurate with the expense that they spend. You know, so I think the values there, we've just got to get people to open their eyes and see it.
And part of that is the experience of it. So what are you changing, just the public coming in and going to recycle their stuff and discard their stuff? Is that changing how you route through the site, or are there new buildings that support that?
I'm not sure. I understand that. I think I do, but I'm not sure.
You're moving kind of where the recycling station is going. It looks like the main trash pickup is, or drop off is staying where it is.
No, the recycling stays pretty much where it is now.
Yeah.
Okay, so how is the existing traffic pattern being altered?
If you want to go back to the to the site plan, maybe I can show it on this one. Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. If you turn it sideways.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One more.
Flip it again. Yeah.
There you go.
There we go. The existing traffic comes in here and goes clear to the toll booth. We're moving the toll booth back to here to allow stacking space. So the people, once they come to the toll booth, go directly to the recycling bins. We're removing all this circulation because our trucks are now moving through here. So we're basically moving the toll booth and trying to force the private vehicles to this side of the site and staying away from this side of the site.
Except
so if you're doing that, then I'm going to go back to Laurel's comment about that you're saving all that dead space in the middle, the scary space that she's talking about. If you're saving that space, then bring the buildings down away from the trees.
That's one of my notes, is to give it a try.
See if it diagrammatically. I mean, and I think you should put the 35-foot radius on
the side. I think a flow diagram will help.
Are there lanes? How does a car?
Yeah, there's no lanes. That's the thing.
From the gate to the toll booth.
Okay. Right now, the car comes from the gate to the toll booth to the recycle bin. We're proposing the cars come from the gate to the toll booth to the recycle bin.
We eliminate the waste bins, though.
The private vehicles from this area.
The priority would be the garbage.
The majority of the customers are
garbage.
The garbage.
Which is where?
The other bike.
Yeah. But this area is really necessary for truck circulation.
So where's the new toll booth? And what does that look like?
The new toll booth is sitting right there back here. Yeah.
I think they're just moving.
It's smart enough being that cars can back up, but closer to the entry so that you don't drive all the way in.
And I don't think they have drawings of the toll booth.
But you're just moving the toll booth. They're just sliding it.
Oh, I see.
And what are the two, like, thing that looks like a Twinkie and then the thing above that? Are those islands?
These were islands.
Well, they're
no longer islands.
Right to that.
These are now islands.
Okay.
That makes sense? Mm-hmm.
Not completely, but...
Yeah, I think, you know, like, as a, just a floor plan and some quick diagram and sketching and stuff like that.
I think it will help, yeah.
Yeah, when I mean, there might be a way to really think, rethink the way
the whole
all works together,
yeah.
And you can
save,
yeah.
You know, half an acre of trees by
something.
Yeah. So visually, where to go.
And missing the opportunity to do something with that toll booth is kind of sad, too. Just... That's what everybody sees.
Right.
At least once a week.
Yeah, right, yeah. Like every Saturday morning, you have the island.
Yeah.
It's
not
really to look like a transfer station.
Right.
It really doesn't.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Just that one.
Especially we spend every Saturday morning there.
We're all always there, yeah.
Yeah. So the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts can have.
That's right. Okay. Do we need to summarize this?
I think a little summary would help.
So. Our concerns on the site plan is circulation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yep.
We're concerned about certain, maybe some, I think to Todd's point, you're not going to stripe it because you're not paving it, I assume, right? So, but you could plant trees, you could do things, plant shrubs or something that could indicate visually where to go and how to.
Well, not only that, is there a way that you can actually improve the flow so that you don't need to chop all the trees down?
Right.
All right. Is this the best solution, what you've proposed here, given the flow that you need?
Mm-hmm.
And in order to minimize that 27,000 square feet of trees, can you actually improve the flow? Traffic control to not need to use all that space as vacant space, because you can certainly do donuts in that big empty area there today.
Well,
not
the trucks, can
yeah.
I don't know. Give me a truck. I'll give it a whirl. On a good day.
They've got several trucks at a time.
No, I know.
Yeah, they got a lot of trucks.
But, that's the question.
Well, I think Laurel's point's really important, and that is that people do drive in there, and when you're in there, people can be coming from anywhere, and you're constantly looking 360, you know, about where to go. And I do think it's, I won't say scary, but I do think you've got to look in all directions before you move, because someone could be coming here, someone could be coming here, someone could be coming here. And any way that you could minimize those concerns would make it a more pleasant place for people coming in. Anything about the buildings themselves? I mean, they're pretty utilitarian, but that's kind of what the project is.
If that can be beautiful.
It can be better looking, yes, it can be beautiful, yeah.
The toll booth was exceptional, it could be very simple, it's a very small structure.
We have done nothing about the toll booth at all, as a matter of fact.
Good,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, we're good.
Okay.
We're going to look at the pond and make it a little bit more environmentally.
And we would support, third thing, we would support you in negotiations with the city about the boundary or whatever the question was about.
I would ask that question, yeah.
So I don't know if that's possible, but we would encourage that.
Yeah.
I guess. Right.
So you're saying you would, if push comes to shove, you would encourage the city allowing them to plant on city property as mitigation for their private property.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the environmental benefit of everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Including the city.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah. I think that would be a win-win situation for everybody, really. Yeah.
Yes. Charles, do you have a comment?
Before, when the county gave the city the acreage, there was a big celebration. Everybody said, this is great, we got this for free, but actually the city put in $1 million to clean up all the old garbage. It wasn't just capped, it was also dug up and taken out. So this plaque sort of commemorated this, you know, all this work that was done between the city and the county. And I have this brass plaque trying to find a place for it. And I was wondering if this area that where this grass is, that we can put this plaque. It's nice, it's bronze and it's heavy.
Be nice on the booth, right?
Be nice on the booth. Under the welcome sign. Welcome to the.
Well, actually, it's the lower site that was cleaned out. The upper site was not touched.
Oh. And we have all the Washington State DOT documentation on this, which is that deep, fold 8.5, 11 paper, which we can provide. And you give me another idea. The toll booth might have some history of the site, as a matter of fact.
Would you want the plaque, is what you're saying, right? Could they put it on the buildings?
A lead plaque, yeah. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a great idea.
Good.
Thanks, Charles.
Anybody else have any comments or anything? Okay. I think
this is our second meeting.
So you would come back. This was the design guidance also, right?
Yes.
That's correct.
Yes. So they have to come back one more time for the final.
Before the application, I believe. Yeah.
Yes. Not before.
You'd like them to come back? They wouldn't. The way it's structured is conceptual design guidance, then they have a pre-app, and then the DRB doesn't see them again until after they apply.
Yes, that's the meeting I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah.
They'd come back for that meeting.
Right.
They don't have to come back to us before that.
Okay.
I think that's fine.
Good, thank you.
I mean, it's always your choice if you had questions, but you wouldn't require it. And there's no reason that we couldn't talk on the phone or resolve simple questions or something. Save you another meeting.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, it's expensive. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
So good
meeting.
Sure. Okay, so we're going to come visit. How come your watch stopped? I give up on your watch.
I'm
not listening to you. Oh my god, we're late.
New clock.
I watch stopped. I don't know what time it is. All right, thank you. You have a long day with us today. Right.
He loves it.
I know. Does this mean you're going to be back for 2 more weeks? Or no? Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Bye, Kelly.
Thank you.
Bye. What do you like? It's like a little tray.
These minutes, then Planning Commission would still be reading these minutes, or is there
these notes that we put together, you give to Kelly or whoever the planner is. And they would put it in the file.
Is it right here for the building department representing the
community? Right.
And they would be in, they would be. So you wrote up notes. Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, you know, procedure here, question. We wrote up notes of what we just talked about. You put them in the file. You get them. You insert them into the project file, I assume.
There's no project file.
Well, you're going to have a project file.
I realize that when they apply.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So then, at that point, do those notes get put into that?
These things that we're talking about.
Because we're saying the Planning Commission would never know what we talked about.
Yeah.
At this point.
Well, they have a public participation meeting, so I've taken to, when I attend the public participation meeting, that's at a Planning Commission meeting, and so I've taken to summarizing what the DRB said,
okay,
what the recommendation was, but that isn't in the process.
That's
I think
not
it's,
written. So it's not written.
We should, well, we should, that's something
that's
we should talk about.
Which planner is presenting?
Because
well,
so,
I do it. That's
you
what
do
I do it.
So
what we've agreed on most recently is Jane and Carla, just like you did at the first meeting today, will
right.
capture a list of the comments, a summary.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and then we do the nod or the no nod. No, we agree, we don't agree with that. And that way we have a record in the minutes of the general.
In the minutes, okay.
Of the general. Jane, mm-hmm. that's your understanding mm-hmm. as well, correct?
So it goes in the minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
And well, do you guys regularly read the minutes?
I don't.
No.
No. So that's what I thought, that when the Planning Commission and the DRB, when they had worked together to create this process, that was something that the Planning Commission was very interested in.
Yes.
So I summarized that as part of my discussion.
Good.
I think the best thing would be to incorporate it into the process, if that's what happens, that maybe the Planning Commission gets the DRB minutes or something
like
that.
They definitely should.
That was the intention.
I totally endorse that idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's easy
because it's not there now.
Yeah, it's not there now. It's easy for all this work to get lost.
Lost.
Right.
So we should provide a summary at every meeting of what we just heard and said.
And it
well,
should be
which
part of the package
do.
That
yes.
we receive
yep.
as the planning.
But I just heard that it was going to go into the minutes.
There's no
so
packet
there's
for
no
public
package
participation.
Because she hasn't had a pre-app with the applicant. So until you do that, you don't have anywhere to put it.
Right.
So
you guys figure out some way to do it.
Yeah, we gotta figure it out.
This is not hard. We can do this.
Okay, so we can.
I did too.
What it would be is a submittal requirement for a pre-application conference. So you'd add the design review board
right.
minutes
yeah.
to the pre-application conference
that's
requirements
fine.
In the administrative manual.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't read the minutes anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I would. We would just put them
if
in the.
If it's part of the package that we get,
it would be in the. Well,
okay.
I don't know that you're getting packets still. Are
yeah,
you getting
are.
Hard copies still?
Yeah, Monday morning. Or Monday.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that's going to continue or whether you're going to go electronic the way
we should.
The
we should.
DRB is. But potentially then if you get hard copies of everything submitted electronically, you would also get a hard copy of those minutes.
Well, the hard copy is wonderful.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Dave, can we,
and more
to make,
functional.
Take up, instead of taking time here,
more
can,
functional.
Can we
more
work
functional.
On that? You guys, we can,
yeah.
Maybe
yep.
Kelly can come in and we can all talk about
yep.
it.
We think this is very doable.
Yeah,
so
we've got
some
part,
we can do.
We've got part one now with caption minutes. We'll figure out the part two following this meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. I'm going to emphasize that Planning Commission really does use the hard copies.
They do.
And it facilitates the whole process
sure.
for us to have that in front of us in the meeting, on the pages, looking at the screen. It is not a doesn't
right.
contribute to a functional meeting.
I agree. Yep.
Okay, I'm just.
I do the best I can to summarize it for you because I think it's important to you what the DRB says. But
I mean, that's
there's good. This wise man right here.
So we're going to follow up. Joe and I have some meetings to refine this process.
I just give the facts.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, maybe get some feedback from some of the other planners about how they do it, and just figure out whatever the best way. I mean, it's fine.
I want to dictate it.
You want to get that? Okay. Well, there we go. I'm moving. Yeah. Okay.
So it does not appear that I have anybody here from Wintergreen Apartments. I am not sure what to do.
Oh, they're not here.
No.
After 4:10.
So that's Charlie Winslow.
Charlie's
here.
No. He had requested the conceptual.
Let me see if he's running here or something.
We had originally, they had actually waived the conceptual. And decided to go right through design guidance, but Charlie decided they needed to go. I can give you a little bit of background on it so you're familiar with it. And
yeah.
Well, the one question go ahead and okay. ask questions. Go ahead and let's at least go over it.
So for the public, this would be very unusual for the project planner to present, but I'll go ahead and do that. Do we
have the site plan? Because the package is pretty minimal package.
It
is, but you know, it's Charlie. He always does a If you looked at his, he always has a vision summary. I can't remember what he calls it. I think maybe it is vision summary.
This is another area, though, where I stepped out for a moment, so I don't know if you've mentioned this, but I understand the portal, I understand how to do the links, it's like a patchwork thing for me. If there could be some, like a cover memo, like the council agenda, and have a cover memo, which really summarizes the whole thing, not a vision, it's a narrative that's like, you know, the zoning,
where we
any
are.
Departures, yeah. You know, what just a summary statement for us, it would make so much difference.
You know, for I've been playing around with what we could do, and I've kind of come up, maybe you want to look at it while I'm explaining this, but...
Because maybe Charlie will show up.
I've kind of come up with this. This is how I do it. Run through this checklist to see.
Okay.
So I have one for conceptuals and one for design guidance, and it just has a list
that's
of
really
the things
good.
That are required.
Oh,
but then
great.
For this meeting, I keep playing with it, but for this meeting, I wrote up in here, like for the design guidance... I wrote, the DRB role is to provide input and guidance to the applicant on consistency with design guidelines and comp plan policy, and then the applicant's role would be to make known any departures. For a conceptual meeting, the DRB role is to dialogue in an informal manner with the applicant, review design guidelines and comp plan goals and policies, and explore design concepts or options. So for this one, if you wanted to look at it, I kind of had, all right, here's what it says in the municipal code, the long version. Here's what the DRB role is for this meeting and what your responsibilities or roles are. And then a little bit of a thing about Wintergreen, and you can look at that.
That's something that you do...
I do personally because it helps me. I'm very organized.
You should see my spreadsheet. I used to be an accountant.
That's one of the things we've talked about, Dave, is that in the future, whatever system we find that works,
mm-hmm.
we should have all the planners on the same board.
So
the uniform system, whatever that is.
Yeah, I think
being.
One other planner like uses my organization thing for projects.
Okay.
But we all kind of share and
okay.
try to come up with more efficient things. So if you want to just roll down to that, their site plan.
This is the narrative.
Right. So it's located in the High School Road District. So that's often confusing. The mixed-use town center is the downtown. High School Road is its own little thing.
It's its own
little commercial area. So this is... I don't know.
We've
all
been there.
So, right. So you have Highway 305 and High School Road. This whole thing made up, and the ProBuild is behind you.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yep.
This whole thing was, or still is, called the Visconti site. And it was made up of four or five parcels. I think it was five originally. So, and that was 8.65 acres, I think, altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And these two remain undeveloped. They had originally, as part of the, they had a conditional use permit and site plan review. They needed the conditional use permit for medical center. I can't remember, they might have needed it for one other thing. So they had received approval for two buildings on this site. There were two commercial buildings. They really didn't define what they were going to be used for, but they did have some design with them. So right now...
It was clearly commercial. It wasn't mixed use.
It was clearly 100% commercial.
Right.
Zone High School Road 2, I believe.
It's two.
High School Road 2.
Yeah.
So
the permitted uses are commercial.
Mixed use.
The commercial. So mixed use is encouraged. So residential and commercial mixed is encouraged, and that was probably one of the primary objections or comments by the public, that they wanted more residential incorporated into this, or any residential. There was none.
Okay.
So. The
the people that are coming in, the proponents of this redevelopment, want to put all residential on these two with no commercial on the two that are highlighted here. And they're debating about how many units they want to put. I've heard up to 140. So,
you know what's so interesting about when you have mixed use opportunities, especially on such a large parcel, is that unless you do it all in the beginning, you guys are cutting us off today. I've just noticed that, okay? the whole circulation pattern, right now, the access egress to this site is so narrow, it is so fine, it's like a little pinpoint. So one entryway and one exit on the other side.
They have polys. I'm going to light that way. Okay. Yeah, they have polys laying here, too. So
that's it. That's
in.
What I'm saying. I just said that. And that is a very, very limited access and egress to this large of site.
That they have to...
Just, that's it.
Egress, egress.
Mm-hmm. And especially the poly lane one, that's very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's one lane going out and then one lane going out to High School Road. I went out there and I drove around there to say, wait a minute, if we put 120 units in here and these are the roads we have, and I know there's going to probably be an argument for another access on 3 or 5 or something like that, and already I'm worried about this.
So I don't know if you want to go a little bit further to show what the buildings, what their kind of vision of that was. So you can see, again, the two red. And I don't know whether Charlie had alternatives. I think he had two different alternatives here. I can't remember.
That looks like an alternative.
Yeah, that's definitely got more green between the buildings and the street.
Right, there's that stone crest behind, and the proponent actually constructed stone crest.
The southern building has in the second scheme. You can see that just if you just look at the parking diagram, the parking schematics are very different.
Yeah.
And I know they talked about one thing they were kind of playing with was doing this was, see, they have this ramp here and this ramp here, and then in the other picture, I don't know if they had ramps there, but that's for underbuilding parking.
But go back. Can you go back to the other one? No, the top one. Sorry, the that one there. So, to further Jane's point, I think, not to dredge up old wounds or whatever, but when Visconsi was approved, it wasn't that site plan is a zoning map. That is not a site plan. That is not what a site plan looks like. What was approved was a zoning plan. And so now that we have these parcels, then all Charlie or any other architect can do is deal with the parcels. So when you go to the next two pictures, they look like Houston, like Miami, like Dallas, like every city in America, and they don't look interesting. It looks so suburban, and it just it's not Charlie's skill. It's that he was given two squares to design from.
Yeah.
And had they put out a site plan that integrated integrated commercial on the first floor and apartments or residential above, so it looked more like downtown Winslow, we could have walking areas, we could have a parking area where people would want to go there, go to restaurants, and want to walk through it, and have a place that people want to gather. Nothing in those drawings. Even though they might not be Charlie's final drawings, I mean, I realize it's just conceptual, but they don't make you want to go there, and that's the sad part about getting parcels and squares,
right?
In the first place, it limits what the design can be later, and it puts Charlie in a position where he can't do really good, really great architecture,
and in
really
some
great
planning
things.
Departments, not having an entire site plan with designated uses and landscaping and everything else, that it would not go forward.
Right.
They can't do it piece by piece. It's got to be a whole picture. In order for good review to occur, environmental, architectural, landscape, everything. And that's what makes it so difficult and why we're, I think, kind of heated.
And we're just talking because it's, we're here.
Yeah, there's so several. We have several projects that were approved.
Are you representing Wintergreen?
No, I'm here for Stonecrest.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what we're talking about now.
Yeah, we're talking about the project next to you.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
There were several projects that were approved over time that included multiple lots, and the problems we're seeing. Some problems, two or three projects right now that were pretty visible at the time and are still potentially pretty visible, but where they're selling off these lots,
right,
and the projects were looked at in the aggregate. The planning department itself is struggling with how to handle landscape buffers, how to handle critical areas, how to handle the distribution of floor area and density.
It's been difficult. Yeah.
Can we scroll back up to the an overall site plan? This project site. So one of the first things that I noticed about this is that it assumes the buildings have to go where buildings aren't. And I think there's an opportunity here where, you know, the buildings are basically going to be slab on grade anyway, so that those rows right there at the north end are, you know, like there's a point where you could actually begin to use the north property line as a site to look out over landscape in that project site rather than...
there is a small... I think they have to...
I mean, you know, like the building can go where the parking is, designated now, and
this area, I believe it's still a requirement, but there's a buffer requirement from Stonecrest.
Right. But I'm just saying that, you know, like it assumes that, like, because the asphalt's been laid, that the buildings have to go between them instead of beginning to look at the whole site like kind of fresh again and saying, well, wait a minute, we could make these buildings look out over a garden. You know, I think there's just opportunities to say there's more site opportunity here than to
part of it. We met for a conceptual. We met for a consultation. I always get them confused.
Yeah.
So we met informally. I met with them and talked about how they needed to really, really look at how they were going to make this a welcoming space for the residents, to incorporate, you know, the open space idea or the communal gathering kind of idea. And then also, if you go back to that second one again, I told them that parking in the front is, you know, this is Wintergreen Lane and it's a private easement, so... You know, I just told them to kind of look at it because most of the time the DRB does not want
parking
in the front of a building.
Right.
So we're trying to get them to do the best they can with it. I mean, part of the really good thing about it is the proximity to services and, you know, the transit, to public transportation and to, the stores and things like that.
I really think I'm a little bit concerned that we're having all this conversation, the applicant is not here.
We're going to totally redesign Transfer.
What we can probably do is just schedule them for a design guidance meeting and have them come in, and I can give them.
Well, that's what today was supposed to be.
Today is a conceptual.
Oh, it's just design guidance?
No, it's conceptual.
No, it's conceptual on this one.
But, yeah.
It's just to identify comp plan and. And could I have that paper back?
What do you feel about?
Yeah, you should try to talk to them about design guidelines and comprehensive plan goals and policies applicable to the site. So I've looked at it, and I've looked at the Visconti approval.
Yeah.
I mean, we were concerned about they'll need to show, especially with regard to traffic, because there were certain assumptions made when this was approved as Visconti, so we want a comparison and a parking comparison of what was approved and what was and what this will result in, and then the parking standards too, whether they'll need any shared parking agreements, things like that.
Yeah, because that's, you know, I go to ACE probably every day and builders every day.
You do?
Yeah. Because I'm a contractor. And, gee, it's tricky getting in and out of there.
About that Coville?
Because you've got, McDonald's, ACE, and this thing, and basically all their accesses and egresses face one another.
Mm-hmm.
And
Plus the backup from the stoplight.
The backup from the stoplight, you can't get out.
It's tricky.
Because there were things...
To get you buried on Ferncliff.
There were things that were promised that didn't happen on this site. I remember looking at a site plan where there were these trees that say we're going to keep this tree and this tree and this tree, and they just disappeared.
Oh, it's hideous landscape.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that.
We have an opportunity. If there were things on record that were agreed upon, and those, I really believe those things did not happen, if this is an opportunity to mitigate for the loss of... Mm-hmm. At least some of the trees. I mean, I don't think all of those trees were designated to go.
I don't know. I mean, we've told the applicants that, you know, they can't, you know, if you sell the property to somebody, they can't be responsible for for what happened on the other property necessarily. I know that this Viscontis is trying to get the trail done.
But, wait, the ownership is still the same.
Right now it is.
Okay, so... Mm-hmm. They're responsible for what happened when what was built was built.
Oh, I see that you're saying to try to get somebody to look at, make sure that everything's been done thus far.
Yeah, and you know, I think Heather did something like that a while ago, because when they were doing the medical center, the folks who owned this development came in and they sat here and they said, look, we went over the top on the landscape, and we ripped the soil and did all this stuff. So I went around with a shovel, and I dug every 30 feet over the whole site. And it was solid clay with bark on top. Like they hadn't, that actually told some fibs.
I don't know how long that would take. My boss could probably assign that to me, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I really didn't do it. Because
no, but I mean, about looking back on that project and seeing if we could wrap it up. Seems reasonable.
Well, it doesn't take long.
It's boxes of material, believe me. It would take a long time.
Yeah,
the planner that did that is not here anymore.
I had the landscape plan, and I remember just sort of sitting there with it on the truck and going through it just to see. Because that corner there, the one that faces 305, somebody in Seattle had a contest and voted it the worst landscape architecture in that year. It won a prize. Is how bad it is.
Well, I think they're putting in, they're still working on that part because we have money for the, there's a trail component going, right?
Yeah,
so they're still working on that and they're still.
On that side of the road?
Yes.
The trail will go across to the west side of the highway. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't go on the east side.
There's just.
The trail's moving. It was on the east side, and it's moving to the west side.
So
is there an opportunity to look at shared parking so that the new residential units could actually use the VM and Walgreens parking? Because those, I mean, the Virginia Mason parking lot is full adjacent to the building, but if you go back a couple rows, it's empty. And the Walgreens is always empty.
Right, what I've told them so far is that ideally the parking that's located on each of the lots will work standalone so that, you know, that would be ideal, that at least it would be represented that way, so that if they do want to do shared parking and there is provision for complementary uses and things like that.
Because like once a day function, once a night function. And you,
right. So there are those abilities in the code. It would just be, for me, it would be nice, and I think for everybody else, if we could separate out these lots and figure out who's what and who, you know, in case they sell off anymore, or if anybody else wants to build residential, say they want to, you know, say Kitsap Bank's not involved, but say, I don't know, they tear down the Key Bank there and build a new apartment building or something. And
if you look at the original site plan for this property, I think I'm right, Ron, maybe you remember, there were walkways and public areas, and it was so inviting. The whole area was integrated in a way that you felt like there was kind of a park integrated into the entire development. That didn't need to go away. That site plan did not need to disappear. It could still be resurrected if we're going to do more building on the property at all, of anything.
I don't, as far as I know, there were a couple of boundary line adjustments that were done, but I'm not aware of that. Like I said, that was, that project planner's not here anymore, so
right.
I don't know.
But I still, going forward, I mean, all the history and everything, now that we're at the place where we're at with five lots or five parcels or whatever it is, six parcels, five parcels, we've parceled it out, and we're down 2 points now already. I mean, for what we could do something really wonderful by parceling it out. So it'd be nice not to parcel it anymore, because we'd be down more points in terms of...
Yeah, nobody's talking about that.
Parceling it. Okay, so you raised the question, maybe someone might sell one off or something.
Well, of these five or six, two of the undeveloped ones are for sale right now.
Okay.
But there's nothing to say that Visconti would decide to sell off another one.
Okay, all right.
Right, I just don't know.
Or not these two together yet. Right.
Or not those
these two together right now are thinking. Being considered for sale together, yeah.
See, so I would like to see a plan that integrated those
sell them
parcels
separately.
Together.
Yeah.
And that's,
see if we could see a plan.
I think that's what his goal was.
But that's not necessarily what would happen.
Well, no, I mean, they could sell them to two individuals.
They could sell them
I
to
think
two individuals.
Charlie's goal was to try to give you something, and unfortunately I don't have, and I'm not in his head, but I do remember him saying that he was trying to integrate
them
together.
Although they're not very integrated in terms of the traffic flow of humans from one to another. They look like two totally separate developments. You know, there's no... There's no bridge that joins them.
Yeah.
There's
that's
no,
right, exactly.
They're two separate ones.
Yeah. Can we make comments about Charlie?
The question, what determines how many units can be built on the site?
So it's there are constraints. So here, unlike the residential districts where density is determined by, you know, so many per acre, this, in these districts, it's floor area. So perhaps on a lot the base floor area might be 30% of the total lot size.
Okay.
And then you could get a bonus because mixed use is encouraged, so you'd get a bonus, say you could build 50% of the lot size as floor area. And then often the constraint is lot coverage, or the area that can be covered by buildings,
mm-hmm.
and then, of course, building height.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to do here is you can go up higher if you put underground parking, because that's another thing that's encouraged.
Because you see how this is messed out, you know, with the development. What's the... Bainbridge Landing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I walked 100% of that site a few weeks ago. And when you go into any of the floors above the showcase, they are just these mile-long, cavernous, almost look like cell blocks of the most inhospitable, unhuman, no brakes down the hallways.
Mm-hmm.
They're just railroads.
It's like hotel.
I did the same thing.
It is hideous. So, you know, I think we have to learn from that lesson when we talk to these folks about how these floor areas are handled, because on behalf of the future residents of that place, it's atrocious.
And also to use the term affordable housing, because they're going to be studios or one bedrooms, is a really dangerous thing to say, because...
How do you put that in the vision statement?
It's in the vision statement, because the studios, 500 square foot studios at Bliss right now are going for $1,700, and then if you want a parking space, it's another $100 a month. That's for a 500 square foot. Is that affordable housing? I mean, and that's...
It's not adequate housing.
And it's not adequate, even.
That's the problem with that. You know, affordable housing is never adequate. Housing is never affordable.
Right.
And so $1,700 a month for a jump in is not. It's not either.
So I think what we're hearing is that we've got an opportunity here to
do something
really encourage these guys to do something wonderful.
It's not
which we will always do.
It's not so.
But we might have a little leverage here as well. Is that right? Because are they 100%? They're not asking for any conditional change. They're asking for changes in the use or not.
It's a change in use, so it would be a change from commercial to residential.
Right.
So that would require site plan and design review.
Okay.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! But wait a minute. I thought you said the high school to zoning could be mixed use.
It could be. That's encouraged.
Mixed use. Oh, but if it were total residential, they still have to do a site plan.
Any change to residential only?
No.
So if they were to do commercial, they were approved for two buildings, I think, mm-hmm. and each was 100% commercial. So if they were to go ahead now, provided their approval hadn't expired, they could just go ahead, and it would. There wouldn't really be any. They wouldn't come back for site plan review.
Right.
This is a change in use, so it would be at the very least a site plan review.
Okay.
They likely have to change. There are a couple of conditions that say, for example, the way it's worded, it says something about commercial use being in the commercial buildings. Well, there was no residential use. Contemplated, so that condition on the Visconti project has to change. So they would at least have to do some kind of amendment or adjustment to the old conditional use.
Okay.
But what they're proposing doesn't require a conditional use.
Thank you, that explains that really well.
Okay, I was thinking I would maybe pass forward
some of the things you're saying to them and then have them just come back for a design guidance meeting.
Yeah.
Might want to encourage him to listen to the recording of our conversation because there's a lot of detail here.
Yeah, well, you know, I know that the applicant's not here, but we have public. Do you guys have comments you'd like to make that the applicant isn't here?
Well,
all kinds of comments. Well, I'm sure you do. But the client, the applicant, isn't here, so I don't know. But you're welcome to please share and come. But you should be encouraged to come back to the next meeting.
I'll come back to any meeting you have.
Okay.
So you want to share?
Share.
I only found out about this a few days ago myself. I'm president of the SoPress Homeowners Association.
Okay.
So I'm kind of curious why. I'm kind of hearing about it now, but I was also here when the developers were first proposing the site and clear-cutting it and the promises made. I do remember your drawings about mm-hmm. their proposed mm-hmm. look. Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. It was inviting and somewhat reassuring that there was a cohesive plan to everything, and that made things easier to swallow. What I'm fearing is things are getting chopped up. It's going to be piecemeal. It's going to look like any strip mall on the East Coast that was built before 1970. The traffic, because I live here. When the original traffic study was done, they said that we would not...
Can you state your name? I'm sorry.
Oh, Michael Schrebita.
Michael Schrebita?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
If anyone needs to spell it, S-H-E-R-B-I-N-A.
Okay.
When the original traffic study was done, I remember hearing the results, and there was some contention about how valid it might be, that traffic would not be backing up.
Right.
On the worst days, traffic backs up almost to the intersection, and for me to get in and out, but... This is crazy. This is kind of like I lived in Iran in the 1970s when traffic was just like anyone could do anything they want, and that's what this intersection is with Ace Hardware, McDonald's, the Wintergreen Key Bank, because you have the exits coming out here, and then you have this lane here, and what happens is this light is so short. People are so desperate to make it. They're racing for this light. Cars are coming up in this turn lane here, while cars are coming in this turn lane here to go this way, mm-hmm. while cars are going this way. But there's like an overlap. There's a big overlap.
Yeah.
And I see cars hit each other. I see cars coming close to hitting each other. And people are taking chances, kind of like squirrels do, running across the road. as they try and make it across. It's across.
Soil management.
From a planning point, this is... just about the ugliest thing on the island there is. Yeah. And I don't know how you correct for it unless land is appropriated and you do some kind of majestic traffic circle of some kind.
Another traffic circle.
Well, the other thing, Michael, is that while all this fun is happening, if you need urgent care, you're out of luck.
Yeah, and you're right.
Yeah, it's bad traffic, that's for sure.
Urgent, urgent care is in the middle of that.
Yeah, yeah. Currently, as it is now, it's already kind of cut up, and someone made the comments: do we have to go by kind of where the concrete or the pavement has already been laid?
Right.
I don't know. You guys already know who you're dealing with. I think in the promises that have been made, I would certainly try and hold them to those.
Yeah.
This is just all really sad. I mean, stuff that's been done around other parts of the island, I think, are beautiful. You know, when you're looking for something holistic and integrated, you know, with how downtown Winslow turned out. I've lived here 30 years. Beautiful. You know, if they want mixed use, I say, then make it mixed use. You know, if you want apartments, I'm trying to think of, like, I forget the name of the apartments. They're behind Safeway.
Yeah, Chameleon.
And Chameleon. Mm-hmm. They are beautifully laid out.
I live there.
Beautifully laid out with that central courtyard and the trees. Yeah. And that's inviting. You have something like that in there. And you get in a couple restaurants and a couple other businesses that serve the local needs. Then you could actually have something actually nice here.
Yeah.
But what you're getting here now is something you can get on the strip mall in Polsbo. Sure. That's where it's headed.
I have a question, Kelly. At what point did this one parcel, it was one parcel, get subdivided? It wasn't?
No.
It was not. Okay.
No, it was just treated as one. Mm-hmm. When they did the hearing, there was really no distinction made between the four, and they weren't required to aggregate.
Okay. Well, why
so,
not?
I don't know.
And that's a discussion we're having in planning, looking to the future.
Good.
This and another project we have in mind, should we be requiring them to aggregate at the beginning to prevent some of the things we're talking about right now?
Yeah.
Somebody have a question? Is there somebody else who wants to comment before I
And I would invite anyone to drive in to Walgreens at, let's say, 6:20, 6:40, any time of day. Just drive over there, see how hard it is to get in and out. Mm-hmm. Go sit on a corner, watch the traffic, look at the craziness.
It's dangerous.
Yeah,
it's dangerous.
So, I think we've all been there.
They're asking.
I remember
sitting there. You're going to bargain down to like 80, but, you know, 80 more cars.
But the problem that I have, I totally agree with what you're saying. The problem I have is if we change the whole plan and tried to have some mixed use commercial, that we'd be adding to the traffic.
Not necessarily.
Well, you'd be adding different times of day. Yeah, and I just worry that we'd be making
traffic
that.
Traffic comes mostly at one time.
Longer time, that's true. That's true, but I'd just be worried that by adding more trips per day, because there's a restaurant, which would be a nice thing to have, would actually be making the intersection worse.
That's totally valid. Your point exactly.
Yeah.
It's really kind of spreading out the traffic over different times of day.
Yeah.
But I think this is another project where, someone needs to bring out a big fat felt pen and look at, just begin to sort of diagram flow and stuff like that. One of the problems that we rely on is the technology making
traffic studies would just be, just the bare minimum start.
Yeah.
Because I don't really think that that's happened. Or better yet, just go hang out there at 12 o'clock at noon and just watch the craziness that goes there.
Yeah.
Lots of near misses.
We are very efficient in our traffic studies.
I'd like to give you a little history here for my involvement. This is why I'm on the city council.
Right.
This is why I decided to run for city council, because I saw what was happening in terms of how the development regulations were being interpreted in relation to our comprehensive plan. So I was involved with the group. Charles, who was here before, was part of that group, Islanders for Responsible Development. And what we asked them to do, we didn't say you can't develop this. We said, do something that complements our community. do some mixed use. It's zoned mixed use. Mixed use with housing on the upper, you know, up above commercial. We don't need another shopping center, and I think that's pretty obvious now. We don't need another shopping center. They're not building one because we don't need it. We got the village.
Okay.
We brought up a number of issues. First of all, this zone is supposed to be less intense, and it's not. That's what the comp plan says. We brought up issues with the traffic, with the intersection, as the resident from Stonecrest brought up. Those two, that intersection doesn't line up. It really needs to be a four-way stop or something.
Yeah.
Yes. It's two-way turn lane, and it overlaps. You're going to go, if you're coming west and you want to go into Ace, you overlap with the people going east wanting to turn left into Wintergreen. And I go in there a lot, too. I go to Lumberyard because I'm a contractor. So we just wanted something different. We wanted to respect, that's what the conditional use permit says, it will be harmonious with the subject property and the surrounding uses. Everything got massaged to make this work. It was a major conditional use permit and a site plan review. And when the hearing examiner approved this, totally got schmoozed by Charlie and the, I shouldn't say this, Charlie's not here, but totally got schmoozed by the developer. And no offense to Charlie, my friend. Totally got schmoozed. And what the hearing examiner said was that when this is all done, it's going to be wonderful. And the only time you'll ever see this is if you're over at McDonald's. So tell me, next time you drive up the highway, is this invisible? They don't. The trees on this corner are like scroungy things that are never going to get very big. It's supposed to be a full screen buffer. So anybody wants to know more of the history, this was it. We fought this tooth and nail. The Planning Commission recommended against it. The planning director had told me in a meeting, I have a witness who was there, that if the Planning Commission voted against it, that she would too. But she changed her mind because she didn't think that they would do that. And we really have these guys sweating. And the hearing examiner bailed them out, and he allowed this project. So that's some of the history. And now we're seeing the chickens are coming home to roost. This wasn't planned as a mixed use like it should have been to really serve the needs of the community. It didn't really fit with our comp plan. It doesn't complement the character of the island, special character. It detracts from it. And now we're going to try and cobble in some housing, which is welcome. We need housing. If there's hopefully we'll find a way to do it that makes this a better site. So
yeah.
I just wanted to share that with you.
It needs to be that, because they've already, there were so many days we're out there protesting, trying to save the trees and the young woman that was living in them and all of that.
But Laura, I think you're absolutely right that trying to shoehorn that eastern block onto the existing parking.
It's absurd. I mean, sort of the cheapest thing you could do in construction is,
Saves a bit of asphalt. That would be
With doing underground parking, I'm not sure that's what they're doing. You know, they may have to tear the whole thing up and
Well, they've got a lot of retention ponds under there, don't they?
Oh, yes.
I don't know.
It's all about retention.
Some of that water actually flows into our retention pond over at Stonecrest.
Yeah, there you go.
So as more of it gets developed, there's going to be more runoff.
Definitely.
There'll have to be some thought to mitigating that.
Yeah.
It's not legal.
We're going to overflow.
Mitigating it such your good landscape.
But I'll ask Charlie to address that specifically. Are the buildings cited to fit into the existing?
Because there's big retention equipment underneath that site.
So I'll have them show where they are.
I remember when they dug it all up.
I think it's located. I remember when this was going in. They have a bunch of tanks here in this corner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's tanks over here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Under that parking area.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought there was tanks over the right. In order to do Virginia Mason, they had to put tanks underground to be able to use that parking.
There was a pond there.
Yeah, that's right. They took the retention pond out. So you know, it's been this incremental creep just like grow.
So, I have a question. If they change the use and now have to come back for a site plan review and all like that, can and should the city require a traffic study?
Yes.
The city will.
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely. Okay. They've already been told that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's already a problem.
It needs to be useful.
Yeah, it needs to be useful. Yeah.
And so don't use the same one they had before.
The traffic studies that were done for this project
by a firm that was not from around here, as I recall, was really challenged. It was not an adequate traffic study, and it.
The development engineers do this part, and what I do know is, the development engineer that did that is no longer here either. I do know that what ended up there was not what was recommended by that development engineer, and I don't know how that happened.
But this county also hired their own.
Okay.
From Ohio.
And that's why I was saying that was really.
I don't think they did that. I think that was the city hired the. They paid for it. City hired.
Well, the city hired.
Well, there were two competing traffic studies.
Yeah,
well, the city doesn't normally. What used to happen back then was that the city would hire. So the city would define the scope, and the applicant would pay for it, but the city would hire the transportation engineer. We don't do it like that anymore. Now we tell them. You know, generally what they're supposed to do, they come into, you know, we get agreement on what the scope is because it may go beyond this intersection down to, you know, high school at Madison or something. You know, it may have to extend that far. And then they hire their own person and then we have third-party reviewers. So it works a little bit differently now. I think it works a little bit better now. And... So we've told them that, but that said, I always like some tie to the other one because otherwise it's kind of isolated, and I don't like using. You can use statistics all different ways, and you can tell all different stories with the same statistics. So I want some kind of tie between what was before and you know what's the logic between the old one, the new one. Not necessarily that's valid, but just some kind of story that connects the two. Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of traffic at that intersection, on Thursday, I tried to do that intersection in crutches. And I was trucking along. I was, like, really, really trucking along. But I only got 10% into the crosswalk before the light changed from the white hand to the flashing.
On the highway?
In both directions on that highway, yeah. It changed so fast.
And I remember there was a lot of concern about people crossing. There was a lot of concern about pedestrians.
Crossing. Yeah. But then down at the intersection of the highway itself, it was such a fast light. I mean, so you're right about the light changing fast. I mean, I couldn't believe how fast that light changed.
And you just dying for that McDonald's burger?
I was coming back from urgent care.
Oh, okay.
Oh, for urgent care.
So does it sound good to just bring them, give them all this feedback, bring them back for design guidance meeting?
We can always give them the option. Charlie will take the option of not doing the concept meeting. Probably.
I don't know that his applicant will, though. You know,
I mean,
Charlie wouldn't take it, so it was offered to the applicant. They were told they could waive the conceptual. Charlie was the one that told the applicant he wanted to do the conceptual.
Okay.
So that's why it's really strange to me that
he's not here.
So I'm just going to have them come in for design guidance.
That's fine. It's going to be, I think it's going to be somewhat technically, it's going to be a conversation. So we may have them do two design guidelines.
Maybe,
So let's
definitely
go over that.
Impart all this.
Let's go over that.
Okay.
So we've given Charlie. Yeah, sure, please. Sorry.
You want to introduce yourself?
Yes.
I'm Ken. I live Ken Stern.
Okay.
I live close by. This is a ugly place right now, and it's the small things that.
And your point is what?
A simple buffer here could have. I suspect that that they have been unable to rent this place because nobody wants a store that looks into a lumberyard. They could have had a buffer of trees here that would have changed the whole complexion of this property, but it still hasn't happened.
Right.
So I think, you know, the small things can really make a huge difference.
So my understanding, I was talking to ProBuild, go there all the time, and they lease.
Yeah.
So they don't think they're going to be there forever. I mean, they lease.
Do they lease from them? Do they lease from
them? But I think they're on a long-term lease, but they're not. I think they see an end kind of.
Really?
In the future.
That's too bad.
They're making so much profit there.
I know. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. Anybody? You guys want to say anything?
just be brief. My name is Cynthia. I participated in the resistance against the project the first time.
The resistance?
I'm sitting here feeling so agitated at hearing how many broken promises and unfulfilled agreements that have not been tracked, have not held that developer accountable. Yeah. And my fear is that whatever you do, as you process what they do going forward, that somehow the teeth will not be big enough and strong enough to...
Yeah.
I don't like the word force, but to force them to do the right thing. And I what's your name?
My name's Kelly Taylor.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
I think you do a good job, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm impressed. When you said something to the effect that if they sell the other two parcels, they aren't on the hook to incorporate the original vision for the whole parcel?
Well, perhaps I should explain that. So I think what Jane was saying was that can somebody make sure that they've fulfilled all these promises that they said they were going to make? I don't know whether they have or not, so I know that right now they're constructing a trail that the city has agreed. Originally they were supposed to construct it on one side of the highway, and now it's being moved to the other because of the bridge, mm-hmm. or the non-bridge. So I know that it's had to come to some kind of agreement there, and we're holding mm-hmm. money until they do that. But in terms of anything else, whether there was an original site plan and somehow some other site plan was approved, or there was an original site plan and they haven't been held to that, I don't know, because sure. the project planner for that is gone. Yeah. So when my boss is hearing all of this, and is probably tomorrow morning going to tell me to research this issue. So I'll probably be looking into trying to go through all those conditions, check whether all those conditions have been approved, and if there aren't, bring them to the attention of the design review board. That would be my intent at the next meeting. And, you know, if there are trees that they promised to keep and they didn't keep, of course, the most we can do is require replanting and potentially fine them. There's nothing else we could do, of course.
Sure.
But
I just add one more thing. Mm-hmm. The what they promised with the information from the traffic study,
mm-hmm.
incredibly misleading and deceitful. And I don't know why it's not legal, why it's not illegal.
I agree.
Because we've got anecdotal evidence that all of that information was wrong, faulty, didn't pan out, and now we have what we have. And
well, we already had traffic backing up
correct.
Pretty far up mm-hmm. High School Road towards mm-hmm. Ferncliff before that happened, and we had people at hearings at that time.
Just saying that.
So
comment to the yeah. fact that the traffic was already
okay.
bad.
So I would just say that I would like to see the city proceed with extra super caution on
skepticism.
This.
Yeah. I'll talk to the development engineers tomorrow. As I said, you know, nobody's here that was here at the time. So I'll talk to them and relate those concerns. But you'll have more opportunities. Probably the best place, this is certainly a good venue. There will be another design review board meeting, and again, I heard some concern that you weren't advised of that as the public, and the neighborhood doesn't receive public notice of these meetings, but you will receive a public notice. You can sign up on the listserv, like Jane was saying, but you will receive a public participation meeting notice, and that's with the Planning Commission. So we'll dedicate an hour to where the neighborhood says what their concerns are. The applicant responds. We'll have the development engineer there, the city development engineer, to answer questions.
And that's before they're allowed to apply for
right, before
they're
allowed to apply.
Here's something I'd like to add. We're volunteers.
I get that. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, well, but my point really is that we all do the best we can. But public meetings are not, in the case of this one, a lot of people showed up. And
mostly we don't get too many.
The more people that show up at public meetings of every kind and the more volunteering that you can do, the better chances of better outcomes that we can have for these kinds of things. So
It's the old JFK speech. Mm-hmm. You know, you just got to do. You got to show up and be here, and tell everybody else that complains about anything that's happened in the past. The only way to change it or fix it is through actual legislation and supporting those legislations.
Yep.
So be activist. I know you've already been. Keep it up. This island really needs it.
One more thing.
Good.
Okay, and something that I'm becoming more and more and more aware of in development on this island, and Peter really represented this for me earlier in this our meeting today, and that is the comprehensive plan, the spirit of the community, the vision of the community, cannot all be encoded into black and white. It just can't. But it's up to everybody that understands it and embraces it in all discussion of development to convey that to the applicant, to the community, that, no, we can't absolutely say you need to do this and this and this, because the zoning ordinance is set in a particular way, but this is what the community wants. And if you want this project to be a legacy project for the community to have good memories about you as a developer, could we suggest, which is what we do a lot, we suggest, we can't say you have to do this, we suggest. And I think Peter did a great job today in conveying that to the storage unit people. So to the extent that we can continue to do that as public officials and as the community, I hope that happens in my lifetime here on the island.
I'm going to get myself in trouble here, but I'm going to say, I spent 15 years working for engineering firms, doing site planning, things like that. I think Dave and I figured out we might have known each other when he was at King County, mm-hmm. and I was working for an engineering firm, coming in all the time, changing stuff up. And I thought from day one that traffic engineers are black ops. They black operation. Information goes in and you don't know what the hell they did with it, and stuff comes out. And I've never ever seen a traffic study that didn't support the project. Never.
Yeah.
And the city may have bought the traffic study, may have paid for the consultant. I'm not sure about this. But generally, the owner does, or generally the engineering firm, or whatever, the subcontractor, it's not in their interest to say no to a project. It's not. And it's the same thing when it comes to arborists on the island. It's not in an arborist's interest to say, oh no, we should keep these trees because they're wonderful. No, no, they're probably diseased.
Yeah. You know, most of the trees are the garbage side of disease.
Right. And if the city, I've never understood, this is my little rant, I'm sorry, but I've never understood why the city can't, any city, can't go back to an engineering firm and look at latent defects and say, in contracts, and say, we got something that we didn't expect that was wrong from the information, and sue them for I mean, they have errors and omissions insurance, and they should be held accountable when they don't do a good job. Because we do it if the building falls down. We do it if the building collapses or if there's some water damage or whatever. And I've never seen a traffic engineer ever get sued by the city or follow up. And I don't understand that, because that's an obvious thing. So the only remedy, the reason I go through all this, the only remedy is for people like you to come to the meetings and follow up and keep bringing this up. Because I think the city and we're all in the system that has limitations as to what.
Yeah, maybe the contract should say that we'll review this traffic in 2 years' time and see if your review was right.
Exactly.
If it wasn't, you owe us.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
They also do what they're doing in North Carolina with the gerrymandering issue, where the new districts have to be actually drawn in public. With people there.
Right.
And let the traffic engineers come in and run the models according to whatever parameters you want to give them in terms of flow,
right,
and stuff like that, and run the models. And it certainly needs more scrutiny, because anyone who was paying attention or anyone who lived on the island knew that traffic study.
Well, that's it. I mean, I have to defend traffic engineers because I have some good friends that are traffic engineers.
Okay, good.
And they are valuable, but it's the cause and effect. Any consultant like that that's propagating a project is going to support the project.
Sure.
So it's the city or some other third party that has to be able to review that.
Well, supposedly the city should, well, yeah.
The city engineering department, the public works normally would review that.
It's public works, and I know there are different, I don't know much about it, but I know there's stuff like, well, it's taken at peak PM.
And,
you know, there are things like that that I don't understand when I just looked at one recently and I said, okay, I just don't understand how you can come up with zero trips in the afternoon. How can it be zero?
Yeah.
You know, just, but I'm just really a layperson. I know very little about traffic, so.
I mean, well, so you don't need to know a lot to know that there are many trips in the afternoon.
So I'm going to. We've given a lot of feedback to Troy.
Yes, I will. So I'll have him come back.
Okay, one more comment, Michael.
Well, I was just going to comment on traffic studies because I just went in front of the city council trying to get them to hold off on the traffic study for Island Center because it was.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't address the issues. I mean, there's another contract that was bigger on it that I was more talking about, but it didn't address the issues that the neighborhood had been talking about. It just was about studying a very specific moment, and it wasn't taking into account any of the local knowledge about what was going on out beyond, like 20 feet beyond that intersection.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have studies that actually have a much more document there, you know, about looking at multimodal, is looking at all these things, you're just going to promote cars driving through an area, and you're just going to promote development to actually happen. And so whatever traffic study does is required for this, it needs to actually take into account a lot of what the neighborhood's concerns are to begin with before they can happen.
I mean, there's already a problem on the ground.
Well, yes, exactly, yeah. And they're not looking, yeah.
So, just because we're already in this meeting, does everybody know how to know about the meetings in the future? No. So, you showed the last group, transfer people that had questions, how to get on the website. Could you do that again, James, real quick? Just so people know how to follow the process.
You guys know how to do this?
This is important.
When you get to the city's website, this is the main page, and if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see sign up for city notifications. You click on that, and then you want to sign up for city communications through Notify Me. You click here. Then you put in your email address, and you can choose which categories you want to actually sign up for. In order to hear about land use projects coming up, I highly suggest you do the proposed land use actions website or listserv, because then every time there's a DRB meeting and the agenda is published, you're going to get it. The planning commission, public participation meetings, that everything having to do with land use is going to come out through that notification system. So that's the one. You can also sign up for the DRB's agendas if you're really interested, but it's pretty much going to be the same information as what you get with the proposed land use.
So these design guidance and conceptuals are going to show up on the land use since we put them in Smart Code?
Yes. Well, what happens is when the DRB agenda is published, we also publish it to the proposed land use actions.
Oh, great. Okay, thank
you. So it's kind of a catch-all. You go to that one, you're going to get everything.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And this project particularly is called Wintergreen.
Okay.
Joy, I have one final comment, since we're in the neighborhood.
Yes.
Michael, I think on behalf of the group, when we discussed the McDonald's project a while ago, asked if you guys could get a copy of the original, very original staff report. So Heather's gone for a bit, then I've been gone, now we're back, and we're going to get that to you. So we've got the original staff report to distribute to you.
Okay.
Just to look at what originally was discussed way back when, and we'll get that out to you.
That's great.
Okay, thanks.
Super, thank you.
No
further business.
Not this
sorry.
Close the meeting. All in favor? Yay.
Yay.
We're done.
Yay.
Thank you, everybody. Kelly, thank you for sitting.